episode of Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well today, Adam. I'm very, very excited to talk about our topic today because, well, frankly, as you know, Smallville's my favorite show of all time, and Season 2 is my favorite season of it. So that pretty much means that Season 2 of Smallville is my favorite TV season ever. So I am so excited. I want to give our Batcat wedding countdown, too, because that's another thing I'm excited about, which is that as of this episode being recorded, we are 80 days away from Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle's wedding. Very exciting. How are you doing today, Adam?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm excited. It was fun to rewatch this this season. It's like I said, it's been a while since I've done a complete rewatch of Smallville. So it's fun to get to revisit.
To pull a page out of Bill Raimi's book, how was the weather there? Did you wind up getting that storm yesterday, or?
Well, it is the storm. It's still in progress. Oh, okay. But as of right now, I still have power because we're recording this episode, and the listeners are listening. So,
is it bad enough that I should be worried that the power is going to go out?
I'm going to say, knock on wood, I don't think it is. I think we'll be safe for the next few hours. But,
okay.
But it was more of a threat yesterday, and it didn't go.
Okay. All right. Good.
I think we'll be okay.
It looks like
winter wonderland out here, but
if the listeners are hearing this conversation right now, then that means it didn't.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're hearing it, it means we postponed and record. We just postponed recording and did some fancy editing. So one of the two. But as long as I stay inside, I'm nice and warm, and ready to talk some Smallville Season 2.
Absolutely.
So what I'll start off with is I think that, you know, having not seen the season in a while, because I think I did a rewatch. I did a rewatch in 2006, I think.
In 2006.
I was watching not the whole series, but I was watching the DVDs that I had up until that point.
Oh, okay. So I guess that would have been the first five seasons.
Right. Yeah. Because I was coinciding with the release of Superman.
Very smart. Right?
And then I did the first full rewatch of the series in 2013, before my
that's what I was gonna guess.
if you can see where it's going, because we're doing this rewatch now, if a Superman movie is announced as we're going through this rewatch, I don't know if I'll continue that strategy, but if it happens after our rewatch, then I may do this again. But for now, it's the first time I'm rewatching season two in about what is it 5 years?
Yeah.
So and I know you said it's your favorite.
It season. Is my favorite season. Yeah.
But you have this show memorized, you know, backwards, frontwards, sideways. So you can say that with confidence. Whereas I will make that determination at the end of our 10 season run. However, what I will say is that just based on what I rewatched from the season, it's definitely up in the upper echelon. Now, whether it takes number one remains to be seen on my end. But I will say that I'm in agreement with you that it's definitely in the upper echelon.
That is great to hear. That is great. So I guess just out of the two we reviewed so far, is it your favorite?
Hands down.
Okay, wow. Okay, hands down.
There's less... The reason why is there's less Freak of the Week stuff happening. There is a more
it's more serialized.
Yeah, it's focused on a particular theme for the season, which is Clark learning more about his heritage or his extraterrestrial heritage. And I really dig that aspect of it, as opposed to just a bunch of sort of solo episodes where there's a beginning, middle, and end to the episode, and then that wraps it up.
Yeah.
So I like that long form cohesive connected storytelling.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, season one's not far behind season two for me, because season one's my third favorite season, so they're pretty close. They're fairly close for me. They're only separated by one season, but. I mean, I'm with you on season two. I do think it is better than season one, even though I love season one too. So, and I know you gave season one an A-, I think, when we talked about it.
Yeah,
so I know you really like
season one. I can't remember
two,
what I gave. Yeah, I really enjoyed season one. This one upped the ante. And what I'll say as well, it seems to be following a pattern that I've noticed and I don't know if this is deliberate or it just happens to be a nice coincidence, but it seems to me that season two of these DC superhero shows seem to be the top tier, because in my opinion, Arrow season two is one of the best seasons of television, period, let alone just superhero shows, I think, period.
I agree.
Flash season two, I think, is really, really strong, and it gets close to Arrow season two. What else is what other shows? Supergirl season two, I think, improved on season one.
Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah, Legends of Tomorrow is another example of that. So, you see the Gotham, I think, started to find its footing. More so in season two and really up the ante. So you see there's a pattern here. And, it alarms me, again, for the newer shows, it alarms me because Supergirl's going to go into season four. Flash is currently in season four, and we all know where I am with that right now, for the most part. We all know what I think of Arrow season four. So I'm a little bit alarmed for Supergirl season four. I hope it bucks the trend, and the same with if it gets there, or actually Legends will get there, but if Black Lightning gets to season four, I hope it's capable of bucking the trend as well. So
I will say I love Smallville season four,
whereas I don't, and you know that, but we're not here to discuss about that, because there will be a lot of differences of opinion on that one. I think today would be will be much more in sync, and no, I'm not talking about the boy band. I'm really pleased with season two, and it actually shined a light on how good the season one is this rewatch. So that's the
part. And I'm really glad to hear you say that. That's awesome.
I guess since I brought it up, we'll kick it off and we'll just jump around.
Yeah.
One of the things that I love, as I mentioned, is the whole exploration of Clark, discovering his alien heritage and sort of learning more. I mean, he knew he was an alien, but now learning more about it.
Yeah, I mean, this is the season where he learns he's from Krypton. Yeah.
Right. We find the Kawachi Caves in this season.
Yeah, we find the Kawachi Caves. We hear Jor-El for the first time in the season.
Yeah. But it all starts with the caves.
Yeah.
Which, correct me if I'm wrong, we see them for the first time in Skinwalkers, correct?
Yeah.
And sort of what I liked about it was what we know as viewers, but I mean, Clark and all the residents of Smallville don't know what it is yet, but the Kryptonian language as markings on the cave.
Yeah.
And that whole mythology, which purposely mirrors, the Superman story for purposes of the show, about Naaman and Sakeeth.
Naaman and Sakeeth,
Yeah, right. And so that whole thing is really cool, and being a male who enjoys beautiful women, I have to give a shout out to what is her name, Kyla.
Yeah.
I think it is. I mean, wow. But the whole thing is just with, and then you know there's the hole in the cave for the octagonal key from the ship.
Yeah. And the parasites in the cave too. That's where I thought you were going for a second. The hole in the cave.
Yeah. Well, those two, which factor into. Let's see here.
Rush.
Rush. That's it. Yeah. So you know, the big intro to the caves is Skinwalkers. But I love how throughout the season they that becomes a set and it becomes a recurring. Like it's not one and done. Like I said, and it speaks to the connectivity, is that it's always it always has a presence, and they always go back to it, and it's never left. It's never left unexplored. One of the good things. It's one of the good things where sometimes I find that Smallville will. There's certain plot lines that they started and then kind of, you know, dropped into thin air. One of them being one we're going to talk about a little bit later, but the caves were not part of that that issue. So speak to let me get some of your thoughts on the Kawachi Caves and that whole idea about it, and then you know the inclusion of Professor Walden and you know, Lex and Lionel sort of feuding over control over the caves.
Yeah, I mean, like you were saying, I love how, I mean, it plays out over multiple seasons. The caves are a huge part. It's something that, I mean, it's really unique to the Smallville mythology. It's a great parallel with sort of the legend in the caves and basically Clark's destiny. I think it's really cool, all the things they explore with that. It involves Lex and Lionel too, like you were saying. And I just think it's one of those things that I guess I would say Smallville, it was unique to their version of the Superman mythology, but I think it's just so cool, all the things they were able to do with it. Like I said, I love the episode Rush, where we get the parasites in the caves. I think that's really cool. So I love everything they did with the Kawachi Cave.
Yeah. The other, you know, one of the other things I want to specifically key in on for the season is, you know, I like to call them the mythology episodes, and it's certainly the Kawachi Caves fall into that realm, but specifically, you know, what I think of as mythology episodes are episodes where Clark gets a power, or
heat,
or when they introduce something like, you know, another form of kryptonite, which they do in this
season. Yeah, we get Red K this season.
Right, and what I'll say, look, heat is the most ingenious way to introduce heat vision, and it basically all ties in to. Basically Clark being horny. because his teacher is one fine specimen. basically he's in class, and she is a was she a substitute or
no, I think she I think she was the new teacher. She was because it's the start of the new. That's one of the things I love, is that in the early seasons of Smallville, each year it starts at the beginning of the school year. And so it's particularly in heat. I love that it's like still hot out. It's still the summer. I love summer. The summer's my favorite season. So just, I mean, this is kind of weird, but it just adds something to any story when it takes place in the summer. So I just think that's so cool. Lex is having a summer wedding in that episode. Like, it's really hot outside. I think it's so cool. It started the school year. So yeah, I think she's just the new permanent teacher, and she's teaching biology, and they're in sex ed class.
Yeah. And so, you know, so it's a combination of, you know, there's this heat wave in Smallville, and there's a really hot teacher in class. And so, you know, that combo, right, is getting Clark all hot and bothered. Plus, they're watching a sex education class, and so then, Clark's heat vision, you know, boils over to the surface and starts burning the
and that sex ed video, by the way, is hilarious. with the animals humping.
Yeah, and then you have like Lana and Chloe are getting they're sort of embarrassed by the video, but they're also, you could tell they're perturbed because all the guys are kind of fixated on
Desiree.
Miss Desiree.
Yeah.
Desiree.
and they're like rolling their eyes.
Yeah. So
speaking of Desiree Atkins, I was just very coincidentally last night, I was watching the 2.5 Men episode that Krista Allen was on, who plays Desiree.
Oh, she's just so, like, man, I know the CW has a thing with bringing hot people on the show, on their shows, and then WB at the time. But my God, is Krista Allen something else in this episode. I was like, man, if I had heat vision, it'd be coming out of my eyes, too. I was going to go naughtier with that, but I decided to keep it PG-13. But you know, there's the convenience of her being engaged to Lex Luthor, which just, you know, hey.
The first of his three fiancés on the show.
And the way she would sort of, she is a crypto freak with the whole...
That's exactly what they say. Yeah. She has
something to do with pheromones.
She basically has enhanced pheromones, so that's why she's...
Yeah, was she was doing something that wasn't she? How did they explain it? She was making out.
She was having sex when the meteor shower hit. So then.
Well, there you go. And yeah, so because when meteors are crashing down, what are you gonna do? Well, just find your partner and go to town. Because hey, it could have been it. No, it could have been the end of the world. She doesn't know that. good on her. And so she gets this part. And it's very Poison Ivy, you know, Poison Ivy-ish.
It's also similar to another meteor freak on Smallville a little bit, which is Seth in season 3 in the episode Magnetic, who has a similar sort of, it's not pheromones, but he has a similar sort of power that he uses on Lana.
Yeah.
I thought I'd point that out, that there is a similarity between those two villains on the show.
Yeah, that's a good point. So she's manipulating Lex Luthor for his money, obviously. It's funny because Lionel was even trying to warn Lex at this point. So Lionel was actually, for, you know, one of the rare times where, I mean, it served his interest as well because family money. But in spite of that, while you know, he's looking out for himself, he's also warning Lex, saying, you know, she doesn't love you. She's only after your bank account, right? So, you know, I thought that was kind of interesting in the sense that, like, Lionel, played by John Glover, is great because he can be, when the character wants to, he can be paternal and an asshole all in one fell swoop, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he tries to get Lex to get Desiree to sign the prenup in this episode, and then and then Lex almost gets her to do it, but then she uses her pheromones on him again, and he. Basically, well, then she convinces him not to.
Yeah. It's a really, but I in general, I really enjoy this episode. I mean, even the parts where you have Jonathan trying to help Clark control the power.
Yes.
And he's like, well, you know, his whole rationale is, well, we'll just, you know, he puts them all in the field and he puts a scarecrow there. And
the part where Clark says, he's like, Jonathan's like standing next to him when he's trying to do the heat vision. And Clark's like, you know, it would help if you backed up a little bit.
Yeah, he's like, can I have some privacy? because, you know, it's almost like, you know, those episodes you bring up 2.5 Men,
yeah.
where where he, you know, he's gonna go, the sperm donor.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, you know, can you give me time? You know, somebody's offering encouragement, and he's like, no, just leave me alone. Basically, it was a similar.
I know exactly thing, right? What you're talking about. Yeah.
And of course, he thinks of Lana, which makes him go, makes the heat vision come to the forefront. I'm just gonna leave the parallels. You can infer your own parallels.
Yeah, are you talking about the scene? You're talking about the scene now where he burns the Talon.
No, when he's still with
the Scarecrow. Okay. Yeah. I guess you could assume he's thinking about Lana.
No, I think he whispers it under his breath. He says,
"Are you sure?"
Yeah. You know, for somebody who loves that relationship, you missed
that. Are you sure about that?
He said Lana.
Because
yeah.
That's why I'm so surprised because I would have thought that would have been something I totally would have caught.
He whispered it under his breath. Like, so it was, in comic book terms, it would be like an internal monologue.
You're sure about this?
I'm pretty positive. Or I heard it. But maybe I was thinking about Krista Crook in Nicodemus. Which, you know, causes all kinds of issues for me, but that's nothing that involves.
But there is the other. Okay. Well, anyway, I like to think that's the case. I think that's great that he's big. I think that's kind of great that he's
just go. Just go. Just go.
The other scene at the Talon, I love. It's really funny when he burns down the Talon almost.
Yeah, and then the one where Jonathan goes to.
Desiree. He's like, I would prefer to have this conversation with some clothes on.
Whereas, God bless him, because you know, if I was him, I would have zero willpower. I just want people to understand that if I was given if Evan Zer came down, and you know, wanted to transfer his Green Lantern ring to me. I would fail miserably because I would have no. Clearly, a situation like that proves that I have zero willpower, because I would have been like, I was here for a reason. I wanted to talk to you about something, but screw that. Let's just go. You know? And you know, if I was Jonathan, I'm not gonna mince words. I would have cheated on Martha. I don't care. I'm being honest. I call it like it is.
You see, so, Jonathan Kent has values, Adam.
Well, what are you saying? I don't have values? Listen, I have values to a point, but when there's somebody that looks like Krista Allen standing naked in front of me, you know, values somehow fly out the window. As if there's a big gust of wind just carrying them away. But, you know, so that was funny. And then he does, you know, succumb to her charms, if you will.
You're right, Clark. I'm looking at the scene now. Clark does say Lana before. I can't
see. This should be a precedent where I'm right and just go with it. That should be the status quo going forward.
I'm just the reason I was so surprised there is because you know.
How did you miss Shima?
You know how much I love.
You should revoke. You should revoke your Clark and Lana card, your membership card to the fan club. Just tear it up in a shredder and just
That's why I couldn't believe you were right, because I was like, I thought I would have caught that. That's crazy. Wow, okay. That makes me love that scene even more, though, actually.
So he does, what was I saying? He does succumb to her charms, and he tries to shoot Lex at her, you know, insistence.
And Clark's move in that scene where Clark heat visions the bullet is so cool.
Yeah, definitely.
When he melts the bullet, you know, in midair.
Yeah, and I want to say. Something was smaller that I don't know if we did touch on, but the whole aspect of the special effect of him You know, where he's speeding up, but it slows down time.
Yeah.
Every time they've done that, it looks phenomenal. So kudos to them
they do it. This is something that, as a Klonishipper, I love this parallel here. When Lana gets the Prometheus suit in season 8, they do a scene that's directly parallel to when Clark would do it, where Tess is about to shoot, I think his name is Dr. Grohl, and Tess is about to shoot him, and Lana bursts out of the window in slow motion, and she grabs the bullet in midair. She looks at Clark in slow motion, and Clark's able to see her, because obviously it's kind of like the Superman Flash thing in Justice League, where they can see each other because they can both move so fast. And so Clark is able to see, he sees Lana do this, and it's so cool. So I just love, you know, it always reminds me of that, because it's a direct visual parallel to when Clark would always do the same thing in slow motion.
Yeah. That's actually a good call on your
part. Thank you. You see, some things I do catch.
Well, like I said, you know, I've had this saying many times on the show. You throw enough crap against the wall, once in a while, it's going to stick. But no, so he was a favorite.
Yes, here's what I'll say. There's 4 episodes in season 2 that are in my top 20 of the whole show. The only other season that has 4 in my top 20 is season 5. But the difference with season 5 is that season 5, I think it starts, the first half of season 5 is like one of my favorite periods in the show's history. And then I don't think the second half of season 5 is quite as strong. So that's why season 5, even though it also has 4 episodes, those 4 episodes in season 5 that are in my top 20 are all in the first half of season 5. In season...
You know...
Yeah, oh, no, you're good, you're good. I was just going to say, in season 2 of Smallville, so season 2 is my favorite season of Smallville. Season 5 is not high on my list. I do love it, of course. I love all the seasons of Smallville. Season 2 is one of the 2 seasons of Smallville that's tied for the most number of episodes in the season in my top 20 list. So it has 4, and Heat is one of them.
Before we move from Heat, I told you this episode reminds me of my time.
All right, you have a story, don't you?
I have a story. No, don't worry, anything scandalous, like, you know. Me being in a relationship with a teacher. Like
that. Oh, yeah, we forgot to talk about the scene where Desiree comes up to Clark's loft and tries to seduce him.
Yeah, but it doesn't work on him because that he's an alien. the one brought back to being an alien, because if she had come... Okay, if she had propositioned me like that, I probably would have... You would have had a different...
Well, also, it's not only that Clark's, it's not only that Clark is an alien, but also it's that he only has eyes for Lana.
Yeah, but a large part of that is his physiology.
Yeah, I would say half and half. I would say half and half because the pheromone part's not working on him because of his physiology. But obviously, she's drop dead gorgeous, and he only has eyes for Lana. So,
again, I would have just given him because knowing how. But anyway, here's my story. So it was my last year of high school, and we had. There were certain classes you had to take, so you had to take a law class, right? So I'm going in, and it was the first day of class, much like it was on Smallville. You know, I'm like, oh, who knows what this teacher's, you know, she was a new teacher, never heard of her. So we go in, we're all in there, we're waiting for the class to start, and in she walks. Now, here's this 24-year-old woman who's now a teacher. And she walks in and she's wearing this, you know, this reasonable outfit, but the skirt is, you know, on the shorter side. And it's like a very businessy type suit outfit. And I'm just like, holy crap, this woman is, I don't know what I'm going to get in terms of a grade for this class, because my concentration was out the window, from minute one. So, you know, she was really nice and she was, you know, whatever. So I'm like, well, I know nothing's going to happen because this, you know, it's not Dawson's Creek. Yeah, this shit doesn't happen. And most often than not in real life. But who cares? Any chance I get to just be around this woman, you know, spend more time, spend an extra few minutes with this woman is a cool idea. So even if nothing happens. Which it didn't. Anyway, so we had to write an essay. Now, not to pat myself on the back. But one of the things I think I'm pretty decent at is writing essays.
I would agree based on your writing that I've read on Revenge of the Fans, man. So I would agree.
Thank you. Thank you. I said, okay, well, we have an essay coming up. And so what I decided to do was, I'm going to write an essay. Basically, I finished my essay with so much time left to go before the deadline that I said, all right, now here's my good copy. Now I'm going to write one full of errors that when I hand in my new copy, it'll be corrected. Like, because I wrote it purposely. So I wrote an error-filled episode purposely so that I could say, do you mind if I, because then I went to her and I'm having trouble with this topic, with this essay. Can I meet you one day before class so we can go, maybe you can help me out. You can show me where I'm going wrong. So she's like, okay. So I went earlier that day. So I met her in her office and, obviously she was wearing one of her outfits and I was just, I was mesmerized. And just nodding my head, saying yep. but I had written the essay in such a way where I knew the corrections that she was going to make. I telegraphed them so that when she made those corrections on the page, that it would look like I followed her advice. No, I knew what I was doing all along. And it's funny when I showed her the essay, she's reading the phony one. She's like, this is not like you. You're usually better at this. What's going on? I said, well, I don't know what to tell you. I'm not having it with this topic, right? So that was my story. And then I fixed it. And then I got a really good grade. It was just the lengths I would go to spend extra time with this woman because she was so hot. Where nothing. And it's funny because a friend of mine, a couple of years later, I told a friend of mine that's who went to high school. That's what I had done. And he said to me, he goes, that really is a Lex Luthor type move. I said,
it was smart. It was clever.
That was my story. And, nothing happened, obviously. But
was it worth it?
she was so hot and she had a perfume that smelled so bad. That I was so, it was all good. It was all good.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's my story. And
fortunately, you don't have heat vision.
Oh, I would have broken down the screen. that would have been the case.
My goodness.
But yeah, and luckily she didn't have any thermal power because I would have given in faster than work. That's it. Now I think we can officially close the door.
Yeah. Well, I'll just say it's in terms of the.
Now that our listeners fully think.
In terms of the episodes of Smallville that I think are just, and I know you're going to disagree with me a little bit here, but in terms, it's one of the episodes that I rank in terms of the episodes of Smallville that are just full out, just entertaining fun. Like they're just so much fun to watch. And he's one of them. Again, I know you disagree with me here. For me, Thirst is one of them. And also for me, Fortune is one of them. So those are like the three episodes of Smallville that I always go back to that are just like pure entertainment. Fun that I just love for that reason.
Fair enough. We'll never agree on Thirst, but it is.
Do we agree on Fortune?
Fortune is the one with the.
It's the Hangover episode.
I mean, it's silly and ridiculous, but it's a lot for me more tolerable than. Than Thirst.
Okay, well, would you agree that it's a lot of fun?
I'm not going to say it's fun.
Okay.
I'm not going to deny that I found it funny and enjoyable to watch. But it's never going to rank anywhere close to, in my top
10. Okay, all right, I'll take it. Steven said it might be his least favorite episode of the whole show.
Oh, with the llama, right?
With what?
Isn't there a lot? What? No.
There's
no,
monkey in the episode.
Yeah, that's a monkey. So why? I don't know why I'm thinking about a llama, but it is what it is. I went from a hot teacher to a llama in about 5 seconds.
My college mascot was a llama.
Any hot teachers, by the way, on your end? Since we're on the topic.
Oh, sure.
This is a totally this podcast is morphed into the. Did you have a hot teacher?
I don't have any specific I don't have any specific stories like the one you told me, but of course.
Yeah. All right. Well, I give you credit that you never went to the Los Angeles. Good for you. Stay pure, my friend. So yeah, well.
Anyway, now we can move on.
We can move on from Heat. I really dug. What else did I enjoy? Okay, so we mentioned Heat.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about the Red Crypt.
Yes. So two episodes after that one.
Yeah, I love the idea of discovering Red Kryptonite because it was used as a scam for with the high school.
Yes, that was good.
I really dug that.
And this episode on Red, we get a Clonicus. Not the first. The first official one doesn't come till calling, but technically,
right.
Even though I don't quite count it, there is one in this episode.
Right, but what I think about it is that you see Clark when he has the limo.
Yeah.
He's spending money that the Kents don't have.
Yeah, he buys in his loft. He's got everything up there. He's got the video game system.
Yeah, he's spending outside of his means, which is wonderful.
It's so funny.
He's very open about using his powers in public.
Yeah.
And he has a more cocky, self-confident attitude.
And Tom Welling. Tom Welling is so good at playing this version of Clark too.
Yeah, well, I will give Welling credit where he does excel a lot of times, is where he's playing like a different iteration of Clark. Those are areas where he excels. And so what I like about that aspect is that these are all things throughout season one and parts of season two up until this episode where the Kents have talked about being strapped for cash. You know, we've seen that.
Yeah.
We've seen Clark have to be reserved with his powers. And so basically everything that what the Red K is affecting is stuff that we've seen, Clark have to sort of restrain himself on. And so it tied into sort of the lessons that, like his rebellion, if you will, because of Red Cape.
Yeah.
Tied into a lot of his, the life lessons that Jonathan and Martha are trying to.
Well, it removes his inhibitions and like anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it basically makes him throw caution to the wind about everything. And so in that sense, I love that, like, he's, for the first time in this episode, really, he's really open with Lana about his feelings for her. And that's one of the reasons I love that episode so much.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the whole aspect of how, also when he asks Lana, right?
Yeah.
And then there's that new girl in school.
Yeah, Jesse.
Which, not to go off on a tangent, but Jesse reminds me of, have you ever read, I know it's a different, it's Marvel, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. Have you ever read the Ultimate Spider-Man comic books?
I have not.
Okay. The way we first meet Jesse, is her name, in this episode?
Yes.
Reminds me a lot of the first introduction of Gwen Stacy in Ultimate Spider-Man.
Huh.
It means nothing to you because you haven't read it, but that came to mind when I was watching the episode.
Well, hopefully some of our listeners maybe have read it and they're like, oh, yeah, you're totally right, Adam.
And so if you ever get a chance, even to look it up online, you look it up and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Okay.
But so there's that. But then, because of obviously, so he has the courage to ask her out, but then the Red K and his, lack of inhibitions with Jesse showing up, it all puts a hamper in that. And I love his Clark's interaction with Lex. Was like, yeah, I need the Ferrari.
Yeah.
Just like, whereas up until now, I'd be like, I can't accept this. I can't let borrow that.
He was going to accept the truck in the first in the pilot from Lex.
Jonathan. But ultimately, common sense. Yeah. But ultimately, yeah. So that was funny, and his interactions with Lionel, who is at this point either still blind because of the ending of season one, when the beam fell on him. And then he had to have surgery which sort of quote unquote left him blind. It was a side effect of the surgery. So he's blind at this point. And there's a moment where Clark, or faking it, I'm not sure if he was, when, I'm not sure of the moment when he...
Yeah, that's the interesting thing to think about, because we know he was faking it for a certain period of time, but we don't know exactly when he regained it and started just pretending. It's an interesting thing to think about, for sure.
Yeah, so I liked when Clark went in front of his face, he put his hand in front of his face, right, and was sort of mocking him. That was kind of funny, because it's so not what Clark would do.
Yeah.
And then the end where how Jonathan and at this point Pete, who knows the secret at this point, we'll get to that in a second.
Well, we probably should have gotten to it first because it's the episode prior.
Well, but our listeners know that we just are around.
It's no problem.
They're used to our lack of format here. The way he and Pete sort of work together to stop Clark from, to get rid of the red cape from Clark's possession and out of the system. I like the way they work together, where Pete lured him, to the field, and then he had to the cornfield, and then he had the green kryptonite, and then Jonathan came with a sledgehammer. Once Clark was exposed to the green kryptonite and smashed the red stone in the ring, that was, and the slow-mo effect on that was cool. When the ring breaks apart and the stone
again, Smallville always killed it with the slow-mo stuff.
they're slow-mo specialists.
They're super slow-mo specialist.
Yeah, well, okay, now you're really belaboring the point. You just blew it. But it was a really good episode, really good introduction to Red Cape, and a good job by Tom Holland in portraying this alternate free-spirited angrier version of Clark.
Yeah, and written by Jeff Loeb, by the way, who's one of my favorite writers.
That should tell you everything you need to know about why it's so good. Written by the guy who wrote Hush and Superman for All Season and the Superman Batman title for a number of years.
And The Long Halloween and...
Yes.
And Dark Victory.
And Spider-Man.
And Catwoman in Rome.
And Grey and Hulk Grey and Daredevil Yellow. I mean, there's so
he's many. Amazing.
When I'm quoting Marvel titles, he's really great.
And more episodes of Smallville, of course.
Yes, but let's get on to Duplicity.
The episode right prior, episode 3.
Where Pete finds the
spaceship.
Finds the ship. Yeah, sorry, I had to but I had to pause and
oh.
And swallow. But very important things when you're running a podcast.
Yes.
Continue living. So he finds the ship, and he's all about. The first person he calls is Clark, and they, they have this debate about, well, I'm gonna bring the ship to my place because, sort of finders keepers.
And it's so good because Clark is trying to argue without being able to fully explain why it's important that Pete doesn't take it to his, Clark's trying to It's a really well done, their debate at the beginning of this episode before Clark reveals his secret is really good, because it's like there's tension there, but it's because Clark is withholding information, and it makes him seem really bad to Pete. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, it was very well done, because he had to, and then he's sort of half-heartedly going along with it because he knows that he has intentions of getting the shit back, right?
Yeah.
But the real, I think, important thing about this episode is that when Clark decides he wants to come clean to Pete, and the whole debate he has with his parents about doing so, and it really does give you the struggle that Clark goes through of not wanting to lie to his friends, whereas, you know, because he feels that he's doing something wrong. By lying to his friends, whereas, you know, Clark and Martha are kind of telling
Jonathan and Martha.
Sorry, Jonathan and Martha. Yes, that's what I meant. Clark talking to himself. That would have been interesting. but you know, trying to internally rationalize why he should, but no. Jonathan and Martha are basically saying to him, you know, it's not. I know you feel bad, but you're not. You're not doing anything wrong. It's not wrong. It's out of necessity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that whole debate was fascinating. And then when he finally tells Pete, and Pete's reaction, I thought, was justified. You know, you try and put yourself in Pete's situation. Your best friend has been lying to you for, you know, years. And on top of that, you find out that the lie is that he's an alien. I mean, if Pete would have just said, oh yeah, that's cool, and just everything's, you know, normal, I think that would have been a disingenuous reaction. So I don't find fault in Pete's reaction and the fact that he, for an instance, pulls away a little bit from
Chloe. I'm not sure it would have felt disingenuous if he hadn't, because like Chloe and Lana had much calmer reactions to it. But I will say I don't have any problem with Pete's reaction at all. I like Pete's reaction. I'm just saying if he hadn't had that reaction, if he had had a more calm reaction, I don't think it would have felt disingenuous. But I do love how in this episode, sort of when Dr. Hamilton kidnaps him, and it sort of shows Pete, it sort of shows him Clark's perspective of, he's like, oh, I understand he was trying to protect me in a way. Because, I mean, the reason Pete gets kidnapped is because he blurted something out to Dr. Hamilton that he shouldn't have. And so it's sort of like he's able to understand why Clark kept the secret from him for so long.
Yeah, yeah. And that was the other cool thing that they did too, was show the burden that's going to put on Pete and show what a struggle it is to keep that.
And that's something that continues throughout the rest of his time on the show.
Yeah. Because it justifies Jonathan and Martha's perspective.
Yeah.
To a degree. So I really like this episode a lot.
I love it too. I love Pete and Clark playing basketball at the end of the episode, and Clark doing that, he jumps up in the air and slam dunks over Pete. And yeah. I just something that I find hilarious on the Smallville wiki, I don't know who wrote this, but in their description for the episode, at the end it says, at the end of the episode, Clark proves that white aliens can jump.
I want to, since we're in the realm of mythology episodes.
Sure. One more thing about duplicity though. I love that following that episode for the rest of Pete's time on the show, really, Clark's got somebody now that he didn't have in season one. He's got somebody now that he can confide in, and he's got, I mean, obviously he had his parents, but now he's got a friend that like sort of is, he's able to talk about these things with, and is able to explain to him what's going on, and sort of Pete's able to help him. And we see that a lot for the rest of the season. Pete being able to help Clark out with things. Like, the thing that really stands out to me is when they get the key from Lionel at the end of the season, and Pete basically is able to help Clark trick Lionel. And so it's one of those things where Pete wouldn't have been able to do that had Clark not told him the secret, because, I mean, he wouldn't have known what was going on. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Yeah.
And then, and when he's on Red K, obviously Pete is able to help, like you brought up in episode Red, you brought this up earlier, Pete being able to help Jonathan to stop Clark.
But then you also see the drawback, because when we get to Rush.
Yes. He uses it against him, yeah. But I love how at the end of Rush, there's the scene where, like, Pete really has become part of the family, even though he did put Clark Jeopardy in that episode, basically the Kents reassure him that, you know, he's still part of this family, and like that he's, I mean, it sort of integrates him into the Kent family, sort of. Yeah, and I think that's really nice. I love Pete on the show. I really do.
Yeah. Okay, so going back to our the episodes, and I count this as one, is we get the first appearance of former Superman Christopher Reeve.
Yes.
On the show with Rosetta.
Yep. That's actually, I just did my latest Smallville Saturday post was about that episode and about Christopher Reeve's appearance. And
yeah, it was very well timed.
Thank you. And one of the things I said in that post was, this is the greatest piece of legacy casting that's ever done. Having the former Superman pass the torch down to Tom Welling. The torch, not the newspaper.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, because that would be, he would have to own it, and then the Mo Chloe.
But no, it's so brilliant, because like DC has a long legacy of being great at legacy casting, and this is just the ultimate example of that. Having Christopher Reeve be the one to tell Clark that he's from Krypton, be the one to reveal that to him.
And the fact that he's been studying the stars and the idea of alien life, and how he's found out about the language and knows how to read.
Yeah. And the fact that they play the John Williams Superman theme when
he shows. Oh, I'm getting to that. Yeah. But even before that, how he shows him where Krypton was and tells Clark for the first time that Krypton is gone. You know?
Yeah. Well, he doesn't confirm it. He says he believes it's gone. But
right. But it's the first thing where Clark gets the suspicion in his head that he's alone.
Yeah.
Right?
And I love the part of that scene where basically Clark wants to deny it. He wants to leave. And basically Dr. Swan tells him, he's like, if you can live with that, I can too. But as soon as you walk out that door, it'll never be open to you again. And I just think that's so, that scene is so good, dude.
but then you're right. The way they use
the Superman. Oh, dude, I get chills every time.
It was, you know what? It was funny. It was both the Krypton theme they used. When he's walking into the office, there's a hint of the Krypton theme. And then when the words come on the screen, when the Kryptonian lettering comes on the screen, you hear the pace of the theme.
Because it's slow. It's slowed down.
It makes a difference. Whereas, you know, and we said this about Krypton as well. It's all about the pacing and the placement of the theme. Whereas in Justice League, you know, it irked people for because it was just straight up out of the 70s.
Well, the other problem with Justice League, and I don't want to get another tangent about this, but the other problem with Justice League's use of it is Justice League, that version of Superman already has his own theme. It doesn't make sense to use the John Williams theme with the Henry Cavill Superman. He's already got a theme. But here on Smallville, it was used brilliantly in Rosetta.
But this whole, yeah, the episode was just I just liked, like, it was the Dr. Swan character. It's kind of like a mix of Howard Hughes with what's the guy I'm thinking of? The guy who passed away.
Stephen Hawking.
That's it. Yeah. The Howard Hughes kind of Stephen Hawking hybrid, he just, and you gotta remember, this is the first time when I first watched this episode that I had seen Christopher Reeve act in a while, and he didn't skip a beat. It was such a powerful, spine tingling performance. Like, if you don't get watching that episode, either get yourself checked, there's something wrong with you, or the only other explanation I have is that you're not a Superman fan, and either way, there's something wrong with you.
Like I was saying, as soon as when Clark walks in that room, when they start playing the theme and you see Christopher Reeve, I totally get chills. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is so cool. Every time I watch it, I get chills. And the other scene that I love in the episode is at the end, Clark and Jonathan in the storm cellar. With Jonathan basically comforting Clark, because Clark thinks he's been sent to Earth basically to conquer.
And the misreading of the message, or potential misreading of the message.
Yeah.
Is another interesting thing that I think then Clark has to grapple with for the rest of the season. It's like, okay, who am I? Right? And it all goes back to making your own destiny. Like, at the end of the day, Clark makes the choice to become Superman.
I mean, that's the whole, it ties in with whole thing with the Kawachi Caves, where it's this destiny there, and it's this idea of, well, what path is Clark going to follow, you know?
Much like, and this is the reason why, you know, one of the reasons why I love Smallville so much, and I've said this, and this goes for Man of Steel as well, is that the reason I love those two interpretations is that the choice is ultimately Clark's.
Yeah.
To become Superman. Where, like, even in Man of Steel, where, you know, the hologram of Jor-El is telling him, you know, we had hoped you'd be a bridge between two peoples, right? But he's not saying, you have to do this. He's saying, you can save it. You can unite our two people. You make the choice.
Yeah.
And then again, he chooses Earth over Krypton, you know, with Zod and whatever. And then in Smallville, ultimately by season 10, he chooses to become Superman. Whereas with one of my issues with the Christopher Reeve version, and also to a lesser extent, Lois and Clark, is that this is Lois and Clark, he chooses, but it doesn't really touch on it that much. But with Superman the movie, it's a foregone conclusion that he's going to become Superman. Like, there's no, to me, there was never any choice. And that takes away from the adaptation for me a little bit.
Do you remember in the Super Friends arc in Batman, with Batman 36 and Batman 37,
I actually love those.
Oh, they're phenomenal. But there's that
Well, technically it's four, because
of the Wonder Woman ones too. But it's pretty, because they're separated by the Batman 38 with the kid, you know the issue I'm talking about. With Maddie. They're almost two arcs. But anyway, the Superman portion of Super Friends, there's that portion of it where Bruce and Clark are basically talking to Selina and Lois, basically, about one another, and they're conversing about what they think about the other one. And basically Bruce is talking about Clark, and he's like, he could have been anything, and yet he chose to be Superman. And Clark, conversely, looks at Bruce and is like, he could have been anything, and he chose to be Batman. So it's like, it's a really interesting thing to think about, and I thought it was really well done.
And I think Jeff Loeb, speaking of Jeff Loeb, I think he also touched on that in Hush. There's a quote where, you know, Batman says something along the lines of, he could have been, you know, he's the most powerful, he could have been, you know, if he wants to, he could he goes, I know I can't beat him, right? Because if he wanted to, he doesn't say this, but he said something to the fact that he could kill me, but he doesn't, because as strong as he is, you know, it's his compassion or something along those lines.
Are you talking about the line where he's like, because deep down Clark is a good man, and deep down I am.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, this, I mean, this episode, Rosetta, for me, probably, I mean, it is. I just don't know where it falls. Mm-hmm. But it is definitely in my, I could probably confident, I mean, we'll do this.
Uh-huh.
But it's definitely in my top 10, no question.
Okay.
And I damn well sure it's in my top 5.
Wow. Okay.
I just don't know exactly.
I love Rosetta. I've got to confess, though, it is not on my top 20 list. Because I do have a set top 20 list that I've written. It is not. It did not.
Yeah, I haven't sat there and written one, but when I do, I mean, eventually we'll do an episode just on, you know, a list of our favorite. Our favorite.
Oh, that'll episode. Be awesome! I can't wait.
I'm gonna go now that I've season one is still fresh in my head. I'm gonna make a list of my favorites from that and from season two.
From
I'm gonna start compiling.
I could go ahead and tell you right now. I'll tell you from season one.
No, don't blow the load. Don't blow the load. We're gonna have an episode.
Come I don't on. Care. I'll say it again.
Keep it. I don't want you to tell me. I don't want your choices to influence mine. So keep it to yourself. That's what I'm telling you. Let me make my list, and then we'll.
Okay. Okay. Fine.
But yeah. So I'm gonna start picking through season one, going back, and then I'll do the same now that I just watched season two. So I'll start putting my list together. But yeah, this episode.
Well, for season two, I've got to tell you because I mentioned that four episodes from season two are my.
Well, yeah, we're talking
fine.
About.
So it. I can say for season two, the four episodes in season two that are on my top 20 list are in order. Calling, which we'll talk about because that's one of the ones I'm going to mention here. Calling is my favorite episode of the entire series. So Calling is number one for me. Then Heat is also on my top 20 list. Then Exodus, and then Accelerate. Those are the four okay. season two episodes that are on my top 20.
Okay. So. Well, I mean, Calling is... Calling is that not the?
It's the penultimate episode. The three final episodes of this season are all on my top 20 list. So this episode ends. This season is the best. I mean, it's my favorite season overall of Smallville, but it's by far the best season ending with those three back to back to back. Accelerate, Calling, right. and Exodus with all the Klonoa moments. Finally, in those three episodes, I've been waiting for.
I do wanna before we move on to some likes and Lionel centric episodes that really sort of kicks their feud into high gear, because mm-hmm. that's where I want to go next. But before we do that, I just want to get some of my. There's not an episode I gotta say there in this season. There's not an episode that I outright hate or despise. Uh-huh. There are just two to me that are neither here nor there that don't move the needle for me.
Okay.
At all. And that is they're actually I think they air back to back from each other. Let me just double check my
well tell me what they are and I'll let you know.
Yeah. It's Nocturne and Redux are the two episodes in this season that just really they're neither here nor there.
You see, I love those episodes because to me they're like those are very classic Meteor Freak episodes. I feel like.
Yeah, and that's our difference. Where I wasn't from the whole Meteor Freak kind of Freak of the Week kind of thing.
Okay.
So when they reverted back to that, it kind of bugged me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you see, but, I love that because it feels so. All the Meteor Freak episodes to me feel so, like, I don't know how to describe them other than just they're classic Smallville. They're like,
let me just say, I don't hate them. They're just, it's just, if they were, you know, if I skipped over them, it wouldn't really bother me. And I'm a completist, but if I were to skip over them, like, I wouldn't lose.
You say you're a completist, and you skipped Run Iris Run on the Flash.
Well, that tells you how bad I thought it was. Well, I'll put it this way. Other family members were watching it, right? So it was on in the background. I was playing with my niece and having fun with my niece, so I wasn't paying attention. But the odd time that I would turn my head and like, catch a few minutes, I would roll my eyes in disgust and then go back and play and catch with my little niece. But it was on in the background, but I was not paying attention.
Okay. Well, you see, I want to touch on Nocturne and Redux a little bit, though, since you brought them up.
Yeah, I brought them up for a reason. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Well, Nocturne, one thing I wanted to ask you: did you notice who plays Byron's dad in that episode?
He looks familiar.
It's Two-Face. It's Richard Mall.
The voice, yes. Son of a, I knew it was something. He sounded familiar.
And then, did you notice in Redux who plays the Meteor Freak in that episode? The girl who is basically sucking the people's age out of them.
Who the girl is?
Yeah, Chrissy, the girl who's sucking the people's age.
Yeah, who is she? She looks familiar.
She is. She plays Miss McMartin in 2.5 Men.
Okay.
Social worker in the final season. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And the other thing I love about that episode, there's a couple things I love about Redux. Nocturne. Well, I'll say first of all, Nocturne. Byron's one of those characters that he's one of those characters that gets in the way of Clark and Lana, but at the same time, I do. I think it's fascinating, the idea of him, this meteor freak who basically his parents lock in their basement. It's really, scary almost. And then it's sort of a very dark episode. It takes place a lot of it in the graveyard, and it's a very dark episode in many ways. But I think it's fascinating, just the idea of that. So, and there is one scene in that episode that cracks me up, which is Byron. He's, got the poetry that he's written. Lana and Clark is just like Lana's completely infatuated with it, and Clark is just so frustrated, and that scene kind of cracks me up. And I love that Clark is kind of jealous of Byron for a lot of that episode. I like that because it shows how much he likes Lana, I guess. So I like that about that episode, Nocturne.
One thing I will say about Nocturne is it kind of foreshadowed Kristen Crook on Beauty and the Beast.
You know, I definitely see what you're saying there. Yes.
And the other thing, I gotta admit, that dog scared the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah.
Because he came in two or three parts where I wasn't expecting it. And I jumped every time he...
Well, fortunately, when he bit Clark's arm, it didn't do anything. Plus, Clark is the man of steel. Right, yeah. But, yeah. I have a fear of big dogs. So, yes.
Oh, I'm right. We can shake hands.
Oh, so we're... That's the things we agree on, I guess.
You know which episode that I didn't like I like that particular dog because he was cute, but
Are you talking about
the episode around it was Crypto? Oh, that was
not a good episode for you.
I wasn't a fan of it.
I love that episode, but I see
not that I wasn't a fan, but I wasn't feeling easy as I was watching. There's way too many dogs here, and they're all nuts.
I get it.
And just like those, this is why I don't like the first Ang Lee Hulk movie, because those Hulk dogs, not a fan.
Oh, I'm with you on that movie, not for that reason necessarily, but I can't stand that first Ang Lee Hulk movie.
and you know, listen, this has now become a dog podcast, so we've now went from who's the hottest, did you ever have a hot teacher, to why we don't like big dogs. These are three podcasts. But when the dogs attack Batman in the Dark Knight,
yeah,
not a fan.
I get it. But I mean, I can understand that. I still love the episode Crypto. I do, but I understand it. I understand what.
I don't hate the episode. It just made, I think it's cute the way he comes up to, you know, with getting quote unquote Crypto.
Well, Shelby.
How they bring the show. The amount of dogs and the fact that 9 out of 10 of them are nuts because they're on.
Yeah, Kryptonite, it's frightening.
it scares me. And the other thing I'll say, I love skinwalkers, but man, when she turns into the wolf,
when she attacks Martha's car, yeah, that seems scary.
When she attacks, when she attacks Lionel,
that's a great twist in that episode, though, when you find out.
I like when she transforms into Kyla. Right?
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
But it's like, isn't it a great twist in that episode, though, when you find out that it's her that's the dog?
Oh, it is. But listen, the thing that kept me, I felt safe because when she turns into Kyla, I get that heat
vision
my eyes. So we're all, it balances itself out.
Okay.
Whereas with the Crypto episode, there's no, but well, there's Erica Durant, so it's just like, okay, she's gonna come on the screen soon.
It's sort of like, and I love this episode, but it's sort of like how the episode Drone in season one scares me that I talked about in season one. But going back to Redux, I like the whole plot with Clark's grandfather and him wanting to have a relationship with him and Clark's grandfather not basically having a contentious relationship with Jonathan. And I thought that was all really, really good in that episode. And also, the scenes with Lex and the new principal are hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Those are great. And I also, I believe that's the episode where they set up. Yeah, it is. It's the episode where they set up Henry Small, which is one of my favorite. His thing with basically Lana and Henry. I think that's one of the best Lana sort of a great solo Lana story that we get in season two. So we'll talk about that in future episodes. Sure. But I love that plot. So that sort of starts to be set up. We don't see him in Redux, but it starts to be set up in Redux. So
sure. Yeah.
And we got to talk about. Before we skip ahead to the Lex and Lionel stuff, though, dude, I know you love, because we've talked about one of these episodes before that I know you love, and I do too, but these break back-to-back after Nocturne and Redux, we've got Lineage and Ryan, which are both phenomenal episodes. Yeah. I mean, I guess Lineage is very Lionel-heavy, but so we could talk about that too in terms of the Lionel-Lex stuff, but Lineage and Ryan are both phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, what can I say about? We may be talking about the same. Let me just double check so I don't. it is what it is. But Lineage is the one with the brother.
No, right? That's Prodigal.
Prodigal
is the one with the 15th episode.
Yeah, Lineage is the one where the woman thinks she's the mother, right?
Lineage is that one where we find out the backstory behind Clark's adoption. Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. That was phenomenal.
Yeah. And it's so good with Lionel. The scene that always stands out to me is when he blackmails Jonathan. Because like Lionel, every time he blackmails somebody, it's like, oh shit. It's like, because like.
He's a bastard.
He tells Jonathan he's asked him to do him the favor with the Kent farm, and he's like, and Jonathan's like, are you blackmailing me? And Lionel's like, I think I said the Kent farm, the Ross creamed corn is what I meant. But Lionel, I can't remember the exact line, but Lionel's basically like, no, I'm just what does he say? Jonathan's like, are you blackmailing me? And he's like, no, I just would hate for the circumstances of Clark's adoption to be in question, or whatever. Oh, he's so good. He's so good.
Yeah, he's.
I mean, he's so bad, but he's so good.
Yeah, he's so good at being bad, is what you're trying to say. But I also I love the fact that the episode sort of fills in the in the gap of what happens directly after Clark Irons,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it brings back the young boy who played Clark and the young boy who played
Lex. The first of several young Lexes on the show. I mean, there were several of them.
But... Yeah. There's been as many Lexes as there has his weddings to women.
More, actually. There's only been three weddings of his.
Yeah, I know. It was rough. Just making a paradigm. Don't take things so literally. But there's the scene where it always cracks me up, where they're all crammed in the truck, which is a different truck because Jonathan's is turtle. So they're all crammed in the truck, and Martha's holding young Clark, and Lionel's holding Lex. This is the most paternal we'll ever see Lionel, by the way. Like traditionally paternal. In the picket fence kind
well,
of.
Well, the only thing I'd argue with you there a little bit is I would say we saw similar things, just not with Lex. We saw with Clark.
Well, that's what I meant with Lex.
Which is interesting. Lex, yes, that's something I always talk about Smallville, how Lionel wound up being more of a father to Clark than he ever was to Lex, which is so fascinating.
But there's a scene so he's holding Lex, she's holding Lex.
Yeah.
And he looks over at Lex, smiles, and rubs his head. It was hilarious. I couldn't stop. I almost wanted. There was a part of me where I wanted Clark to remember that. And be with, talking with Lex, and all of a sudden just smile and rub his head. That would have been hilarious. Or it would have been good to see if this episode had come before Red.
Uh-huh.
So Clark would have that memory. And then while he was on Red Kryptonite, he rubbed his head. That would have been hilarious.
Well, hey, there were more opportunities because Clark was on Red K after that, too.
Yeah. So I think that was a missed opportunity for me. But yeah, that episode was, again, just the fact that they went back and they filled in the gaps, I thought was cool. And again, it shows you that how, Lionel's intertwining with the Kents and Clark happened a lot earlier than we were led to believe, which is very interesting.
And I love how Clark sort of, once he finds out this, he feels guilty about he already felt guilt about the meteor shower, and now he feels guilt about the basically Lionel's presence in Smallville and what he did to the and basically because Clark was indirectly, I mean, I don't hold him responsible, but he was sort of indirectly responsible for what happened to Pete's family's business to the cream corn factory because and basically Jonathan, I think in the episode, tells him, it's not your fault. If it's anybody's fault, it's my fault. So anyway, I love that episode. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. And then,
God, I mean, it's so tragic.
Here's the simple above all, it's tragic because, Clark has made this this friend that he feels, like a brother,
mm-hmm.
And like a younger brother, I should say.
Yeah.
What I think this hammers home is that, and it'll get hammered home, in the 100th episode, but it starts to hammer it home here, is that with all his powers, he can't save someone from death.
Yeah. Right? He talks about it in Ryan. How there's nothing he can do to save her, and he tries everything. I mean, he runs across to find that doctor right before he gets on the plane.
Yeah, and the reason to me that it's so heartbreaking is because there's the moment where you think, okay, he succeeded. He found the doctor did the surgery.
Yeah.
And now Ryan is gonna, and then all of a sudden they pull the bait and switch. And it turns out that it only gave him a couple
of quick weeks. Question for you. Do you think that the episode 1159 of Arrow the scene with Laurel, do you think that was inspired by that, where you think she's fine, and then all of a sudden she flatlines?
It could be. I don't know how closely those guys are trying to pay homage to Smallville, but it could be.
I ask because, as you know, I find Smallville references in everything, even when they're not there.
Yeah, you pick them out of work. But no, it makes a lot of sense. But yeah, so it's the shock of, oh, he's not fine, when you think he's going to be.
That, yeah.
Really hits. And then the fact that it just doubles down that, hey, Clark can't outrun death. He can't make miracles.
Yeah. And the scene with Clark and Ryan on the hot air balloon always makes me cry at the end. And Ryan tells him, like, you're going to change a lot of people's lives, Clark. Oh, man, it's so good.
And then they're playing the Five for Fighting Superman song.
Yeah.
In the background. It's kind of cool. The other part of this episode that I mean, that's not so sad, that's kind of cool, is that they bring up the Warrior Angel stuff
again. Another, like we were just talking about with the parallel, there's multiple parallels with Clark here, sort of like things that reference his destiny, because we talked about the Kawachi Cave painting, but then there's also the Warrior Angel parallel with him and Lex, which is so fascinating. And in the episode, Ryan, basically, Lex has that conversation with Ryan where they're talking about why Warrior Angel and his villain, basically, that they used to be best friends. And then Davilicus is the villain's name. I just remember Davilicus is the villain's name.
Yeah.
And basically, Ryan and Lex have that great conversation where Ryan asks Lex why Davilicus went bad. And, oh, man, it's so good, because you know what's going to happen. And he's
talking about,
it's so good, dude.
And how you know, he wore it. Like, the cool thing was, for me, at least this time around, was that Ryan was more open-minded towards Lex. Like, he still gave him the warning.
Yeah.
But he was more open-minded towards Lex. Mm-hmm. And I like that. But also, when Ryan tells him, you know, make sure you don't let evil win for you, right? And he said, well, you know, Lex goes, life's a lot more, you know, complicated. It's not all black and white.
Yeah. Right?
And so that, again, that whole discussion was kind of was great. But so yeah, I mean, it was just such a powerful episode.
Oh yeah, yeah. Really one of the most tragic stories.
Yeah, it's one of the most emotionally charged, for sure.
Yeah, it's amazing, though. And
along with episode 100.
Yeah, along with episode 100. Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a few, and for me, the episode that makes me cry the most is Requiem.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that always gets me. Because I mean, and obviously there's a reason for that, because it's the end of Clark and Lana's relationship with the kryptonite kiss, and oh man, it kills me. Sure, but yeah, that's number one for me. But I would say, yeah, I mean, Reckoning, the 100th episode, that one too. Ryan, I would say in a lot of ways, Accelerate, which we'll talk about soon, is, I would say that's a really, it's a dark story. It's a tragic story. So, and then I would say, the episode Right Reckoning, where basically Clark watches the video of Jonathan with Martha, and God, yeah. that's a scene.
Yeah,
that
when he comes in and hears his voice.
Yeah, that's a scene that kills me. The scene at the end of season 7, where Clark is watching Lana's Dear John video, that kills me. I mean, God, there's a lot of tragic moments on Smallville. Oh, the episode, I'll tell you another one. The season 10 premiere where John Schneider comes back as a vision to Clark, and he's in the field. Oh man, that scene kills me too.
Yeah, that was a good one,
too. So, anyway, Smallville has a lot of tearjerker moments, but Ryan is definitely one of them.
But, it was Ryan was great.
To talk about a funny moment, though, just to mention Dichotic real quick, the episode right after that, one of the funniest moments on the whole show is Lex taking the golf club to the Meter Maid's car and just getting sent to anger management after doing that. I mean, it's sort of a little glimpse into the sort of what Lex is capable of, but it's also just a really funny moment, right? And it's sort of what leads him to meet Helen. But that's just a moment from Dichotic.
And that's the first time we get a glimpse of Helen Bryce, who becomes, you know, a big factor at the tail end of
that. I mean, the second woman who Lex marries in season two.
Right. But she, you know, I think she was the closest to an actual love match for Lex, whereas...
Well, here's a question for you. What do you think... Because this is something that I love about the whole Helen thing with Smallville, and we can just go ahead and get into this real quick. The whole Helen storyline I love. And by the way, Helen Bryce Emmanuel Vower is coming to Dragon Con this year, and I'm so excited because I'm going to try and meet her. And if I do, then she'll be the second Smallville alum I've met, because I met Michael Rosenbaum last year there.
Now, are you going to take a picture with her as well? Like you do with
I'm Max? Hoping to, yeah.
Well, you should.
Yeah, I'm really hoping to.
If you don't, I'm going to slap you because that's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, no, I'm hoping to. I'm hoping to do that. I'm probably going to.
I missed my opportunity. I missed my opportunity with Erica Durant. I'll tell that story around season 4.
Okay.
When she debuts. I got another story. I got some stories
for you. I'm hoping to meet her at some point, too.
We could do a segment, story time.
Story time with that. Hey, well, you had a good one on this episode for sure.
Yeah.
Going back to Helen, basically, they leave it ambiguous. And this is something that Emmanuel Vower was so good at on the show, is you never knew where her true allegiance lied. You didn't know.
See, I want to believe that she was with Lex.
Up until what point? Up until he lied about the blood? Is that when you think she turned?
I think that's when she lost. She lost.
Okay, and that you think that, because basically she found out about the blood, then she leaves, and you think it's when she came, like she left, and then she decided, wait, I can get back at him, and then that's why she came back? You think that's what it was?
I think so.
I can roll with that.
Because here's why. Because she flat out asked him if he took the blood.
Yeah.
And he denies it, right? So.
He denies it at first, and then he comes clean to her.
Yeah, but the fact that he wasn't straight up right from the get-go,
yeah.
I think really turns her off. But, you know, and since you brought her up, she plays a key factor in one of it's a mythology episode, Fever.
Yeah.
You know, and how both... Martha and Clark get sick because of the, how can we phrase it?
Kryptonite dust, basically?
Yeah, kryptonite dust residue is the best way to explain it. And,
Now, here's an episode where Clark says Lana under his breath that I definitely did.
And you know what? Good for, look, I'm not, you know, everybody knows my stance on shipping. But in this instance, I'll say good for him, because at this point, Chloe was starting to get on my nerves with her incessant whining over Clark and Lana being in a relationship. And it wasn't outward whining. It was just like an inward sort of, internal whining.
Didn't you side with Zach when we talked about this before?
What? No, the only thing I said was that she had feelings for Clark, and it was obvious, whereas you said it wasn't obvious.
Well, I said it came out of nowhere. I mean, it was obvious.
Yeah, you said it came out of nowhere. We're saying.
Well, obvious. It was obvious once it came out of nowhere, but before that, it was.
No, even in the first season, I could see it in certain episodes. But my point is, I never said I liked her reaction. Like, once the prom, the semi-formal, whatever the hell that dance was at the end of the first season. Once he basically, you know, once the line of their friendship had been set, and they both agreed to it, even though she half-heartedly did, right? At the beginning, I think it was the beginning of season.
Yeah, it was in Vortex.
Right then and there, stop your bullshit. Like, to me, enough. You guys have drawn the line in the sand. Enough of this whining and getting petulant whenever you see Clark and Lana together. It just, to me, it was, and then, you know, how eventually she temporarily sides with Lionel, right?
Yeah.
And it all stems from her being bitter. She got to be a whiner in those seasons.
I felt really bad for her in that scene where she reads the letter to Clark and he says Lana's name. I mean, obviously, like, as a Lana shipper, I'm...
yeah, but listen, sucks to be you. You know, but here's the thing. She knows he's in love.
But I still feel bad for her.
Suck it up. You know, we don't always get things that we want in life. Deal with it.
Jeez.
Like, see, people need my kind of tough love in this world. We have a lot less people that want things, you know, they think they're old things and think, you know, they deserve.
But I still feel bad for her, though.
If I was, it's not right. But her reactions afterward minimize my feeling bad for her. If you catch me.
Okay. In that, fine. Can we at least say in that moment?
Sure. Okay. Fine. Whatever. Yeah.
But I do.
But even then, she knows she.
I mean, I'm glad. I'm glad that Clark and Lana wound up. I mean, superseding that, because obviously you know how huge a Lana shipper I am. But that doesn't mean that in that moment. I mean, I love Chloe Sullivan as a character, so in that moment, I did feel bad for her.
All right, fair enough.
That's all I'm trying to say.
No, and it was a good episode. Like the idea of my thing I wanted to say was the ship and how it sort of rescues both Martha and Clark.
Yeah.
And so now just clarify something for me.
Mm-hmm.
She was the ship. They make the insinuation that the ship, quote unquote, helped get Martha pregnant from what happened in Vortex, right?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Just wanted to clarify the timeline there. But we'll get to the pregnancy thing in a bit
later. Yeah.
But I want to talk a bit, just a couple of episodes about Lex and Lionel and the further deterioration of that.
Let me guess which episode you're going to say.
Well,
Insurgents
two,
and Prodigal, mean... right?
Yes.
Yep, I knew it. yeah, great episode.
Like the way Lex orchestrates that attack on Luther Corp, and like it's all hush hush behind the scenes.
Yeah.
That is very much in keeping with the Lex that we're familiar with from the comics.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could, or the animated series, because when I think of both, I could see those versions of Lex doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's always great in the early seasons of Smallville when you see little glimpses of the man who Lex will become, when it's like, he's not fully there yet, but you're seeing that he is capable of being, well, who we'll see him as later on the show.
And then we have the whole part Clark has to make the rescue.
And he jumps off the Daily Planet?
Yeah, oh, that was awesome. I mean,
yeah.
The foreshadowing that was it was
so incredible. Cool. And we see Maggie Sawyer in that episode.
And the other cool thing was it also ties into the whole pre-flight Superman, the whole idea of he's able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
Yeah.
So there's that tie into it. But seeing, you know, the Daily Planet and him, you know, him the roof and all that, it just, the imagery there is so iconic.
Yeah. I was actually just talking to Tim Beadle, my buddy from DCComics.com, about that about that scene, because Insurgents is one of his favorite episodes of Smallville, and we were talking about how awesome that scene is.
Yeah, and where you know, Martha and Lionel, because she's working for me.
Yeah. Much to Jonathan's chagrin.
Yeah, but then in the end he says, keep working so we can get dirt.
Well, it's because of this episode, because they find out what Lionel's got in that safe.
Yeah, he's got, you're right. He's got the bars of kryptonite.
Yeah.
And he also has the octagonal key.
Yeah.
But you know, the fact that Clark can, Clark comes in and saves, and you wonder, can Lionel see at this point?
I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking the same thing.
Because if so, he saw a lot of shit. Yeah. A lot of incriminating shit for Clark, right?
So, yeah.
But the whole rescue and the way that was pulled off, I thought it was very well done. So that, the combination of the foreshadowing, Lex's, you know, deviousness, and learning just how much Lionel had on Clark and the Kents was amazing.
And co-written by Jeff Loeb, another Jeff Loeb.
Yeah, see what I mean? See what I mean? And then there's
One thing before we get on to that episode, though. One thing I forgot to mention on a previous episode that I really didn't want to forget. The Dr. Gardner from Ryan.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention him. Because I think he's one of the most underrated villains on Smallville. Because
yeah, I go for that.
He just especially in Ryan, every time he shows up, I just want to punch that guy in the face. Like, he's so, because
yeah, he's got one of those faces that you just can't punch. Yeah.
Well, also just like what he was doing to Ryan, and it's like he's and I love the scene in that episode where Lex basically, Dr. Gardner thinks he has the upper hand, and Lex basically comes in at the last minute and basically makes it so that Ryan doesn't have to go with Dr. Gardner. But just because of what Dr. Gardner was doing to Ryan, and the fact that he keeps trying to take Ryan away from the Kents, and he's like, oh man, he's just so, oh, I just wanted to punch that guy. I hate him so much. I mean, he's a great villain, but I just hate him so much.
And consequently, you know, there are a lot of people that that have that kind of face for me. You know,
that you want to punch?
Maybe people just aggravate me more than I like to believe.
Was it in Civil War where Tony Stark told
that's me 9 times out of 10, or let's be generous, 8 out of 10. You know, one day I'm gonna have one of those moments where I take a club to a car, because I'm gonna have a Lex moment one day. Hopefully I'll meet somebody that's but in counseling, but we'll see.
Oh, speaking of which, she was on 2.5 Men too, because we talked about two characters on.
Yeah, and she also had her own series for like a season or two, Painkiller Jane.
I never saw that.
I thought it was
okay. It's funny to me that there's three actors, maybe there's more, but there's three actors I can think about in season two of Smallville that were on 2.5 Men, which is just funny to me.
Yeah. Well, like I said, when you've been small, by virtue of being 10 season long, you're gonna get that.
Well, sure, but I'm talking about this is three in just one season, in just season two.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
Which is an interesting coincidence.
What else? What else can I tell you about?
Prodigal. Yes. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Yes, go on. Go on. Say what you're gonna say about Prodigal.
That was again another just fascinating study into the dysfunction that is Lex and Lionel.
Because
here you have Lionel for all of Lex's life, pretty much, with the exception of the instance where Julian was a baby. But pretty much for most of Lex's childhood and life, he's been telling him that your brother died. And next thing you know, Lex is coerced into finding, or so we believe, into finding Julian, who is played by, I'm going to pull a U and say, Vampire Diaries alumnus, Paul Wesley.
Him and Ian Somerhalder, who we'll talk about next season.
Well, that's how they got the job on Dave, right? Because WB reuses, you know, their actors that they've
worked with. Sure, I mean, Jason Teague, too.
Right, exactly, right? But I do much prefer him on Supernatural than I did on
Smallville. Jason or Lucas?
No, what's his face? Dean Winchester.
Oh, yeah, Jason T. Jensen Ackles.
Yeah, I couldn't think of his actual name.
Right. So. Paul Wesley was on Supernatural. He was on Vampire Diaries. Yeah.
Right. And so what I loved about the fact is that for the majority of the episode, you didn't know whose allegiance, where Lucas's allegiance would fall.
Exactly. First you thought he was with Lex, then you thought he was with Lionel, then you realized he was still with Lex again.
Yeah, it was very touch and go.
Kind of like we were just talking about with Helen, how it's hard to know exactly where her allegiance. I mean, you sort of convinced me. You sort of had a good theory about that, and you convinced me that that's probably the case. But
this episode proves that I'm right all the time. This is, folks, listeners, this is the takeaway. This is the moral.
Well, what was that? You remember why I'm right. You called me Justin at the end of an episode, and I told you it wasn't you, and I told you to call me Justin. You said you didn't, and then I looked back and was editing the episode, and it turned out I was right.
Listen, I'm prone to make one mistake every 20 years.
Well, then you're not always right.
All right. Nine times out of ten, I'm right, and everybody should just accept that and move on. The world would be a much better place. It was cool that you didn't know where he was going to be.
That was awesome.
And I kind of like that he was the one that sort of discerned that Lionel was faking his blindness.
Yeah. I feel like Lucas, in a lot of ways, you can see, basically, he shares a lot in common with Lex in terms of his perception and in terms of his cunning and in terms of, like, you know, just the way he is, there's a lot of similarities between him and Lex. So a lot of the things he did in that episode felt very Lex-like. And so you can definitely see that it's not hard to buy that they're related because...
But the other thing I liked was the sort of, before we get to the final aspect of this episode, of this particular episode, mm-hmm. Of Prodigal, one of the things I liked was the sort of animosity between Clark and Lucas, because here you have somebody who thinks of Lex as an older brother.
Mm-hmm.
And is now jealous of the actual younger brother of Lex in Clark. And then conversely, you have Lucas, who is Lex's younger brother, but sees Clark's place in Lex's life as the sort of surrogate younger brother, and he's jealous of the relationship they have. And so that animosity when they were playing basketball was kind of fun to watch play out. But I really love the way Lucas and Lex ultimately played Lionel for a fool. He had it coming, especially with his feigned parental, you know, guidance and affection for Lucas. Lionel got what he deserved, and the way they played him off with the whole kidnapping ruse was, again, another typical Lex from the comics in the animated series move, which I appreciated quite a bit. So, that's my thoughts on Prodigal.
Sure. Yeah, it's I'm with you. It's a great episode.
Let's talk about, let me look here. There's a couple episodes that weren't really overly connected to the grander scheme of the season. But I want to mention, then we'll get into the final few where we can really key in on the last, I think the last two really pick up, really, really go heavy into the obviously into the crux of the season. But
yeah, like I said, the three before, I love the final three for me. Just, I mean, that's where all the Kalana stuff is, yeah. And I just.
But before we get there, I want to talk about two episodes that were kind of like, just on, kind of on the
okay. run,
but still really really good episodes, and that was The Witness.
Okay.
And not Witness. Sorry, the one where Where, which was the one where, what was the title of it? The one where, the Suspect, sorry.
Oh, Suspect, yeah. That's a lot Suspect. Earlier. That's Suspect is the 13th
sorry, episode. Sorry, yeah, my mistake. But,
where Jonathan gets framed for.
Yeah, what a great episode.
Oh, yeah.
It's
great because it's a mystery, and you're trying to figure out the whole time. You're like, it's a really well done mystery. Where yeah. you're trying to figure out, like, you can't imagine that Jonathan would have done it, but you're like, all the evidence seems to be pointing right at him, and you're like, "What is it?" It's like a great murder mystery. It's so cool.
And I loved how you're right. The unpredictability of where in each of the flashbacks pointing the finger at somebody.
Yeah.
There was a plausibility to that suspect. Where yeah, I could see it.
Yeah.
It also plays into the fact that, I mean, it's kind of like that, you know, remember the old show Dallas where who shot JR? There was a big hoopla about that. It's kind of playing into that, and given the fact that, you know, John Schneider was on Dukes of Hazzard, it kind of has some sort of weird connection in that sense. I did not see the twist coming that it was the sheriff.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. Me neither. The first time I watched this episode, I was like, oh.
And my question is, how does Lionel survive this shit? Like, well, I thought he should be dead.
I mean, given that Sophia Falcone on Gotham this season got shot point blank in the head.
But Gotham has its own rules where about death and all that.
This is more believable to me than Sophia Falcone getting shot right between the eyes and living. So.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. But the twist was great.
Oh yeah, yeah. It really was, and especially like Sheriff Ethan had been. This was his 14th episode of the show, so we'd really gotten to know him. I mean, he was a small. He was never a major character, but like it felt impactful for it to be him because they really built him up as a character over time. So basically. I felt that there was an attachment to Sheriff Ethan when it happened, and especially like he was friends with Jonathan, so like it was an impactful twist there at the end.
Yeah, that for sure. But really, just a great standalone episode.
Oh yeah, it's a very unique episode. Like there's not that many. I mean,
and very dark too. Very really.
Yeah. I would say the darkest episode of this of season two is Accelerate, which we'll get to because it's one of my favorites. But definitely that one. Oh, or maybe actually no, I wouldn't say Accelerate. Precipice is really dark, too. So maybe Precipice deals with some real issues. I mean, in that episode, so maybe I would say Precipice. But in terms of tone, probably Accelerate's a little bit darker. But in terms of the subject matter, I would say Precipice is the darkest. So.
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure. But one of the other ones that I think deserves mention and some conversation about was the one with the kid who
Visitor?
He's in,
yes. That episode is so good, and I love how it follows. First of all, it's perfectly placed in the season in that it directly follows up Rosetta, where Clark just finds out he's an alien, and now he finds out that maybe he starts to think he's not alone in Visitor. And what I love about when I first saw Visitor, I remember thinking fucking, I was like, this is another episode that just sort of just blew my mind. I was like, what, who is this kid? Like, I wanted to believe this kid. I was like, is this another Kryptonian somehow? I was like, I was thinking the same thing Clark was. And then you find out what's going on, and that's another tragic episode, sort of, when you find out what really happened. But it's a really good episode. I love that episode.
Yeah, and just the whole, I love the explanation of why the kid thought he was an alien, because, you know, his parents had died in, you know, the meteor shower.
Yeah. Right? He was a meteor freak, so that's why he did have the powers, yeah. But
he used, like the trauma caused him to use what he saw on the day of the meteor, which was the ship crashing, and associate it with himself.
And you know what, Adam? It sort of foreshadows Labyrinth.
Yeah.
It sort of foreshadows that episode, which is really cool, because it's sort of like Labyrinth is this episode, and obviously we're not talking about season 6 yet, but I'll just touch on it because it is related to Visitor in terms of this parallel I'm making. Labyrinth is this episode where, of course, Clark is basically he's attacked by one of the zoners, and he thinks he's in this mental institution. They're telling him, oh, you made everything up. You're not really Kryptonian.
Yeah, it's kind of like the reverse.
Exactly. And what I love so much about Labyrinth, and Labyrinth is another episode that's on my top 20 list. I love that episode. What I love about that episode so much is that it's an episode where the scary thing about Labyrinth, Adam, the scary part is it's plausible. That could be true. Like, it is not hard to think. Like, there could be an Elseworld story of Superman where that really was the case. And he is this guy dealing with this trauma and basically has...
I think they should write that as an Elseworld story. Or maybe they have...
Wouldn't it be brilliant? There's this fan theory I know of online about Batman, where it's basically the same thing with him, where somebody made a fan theory that would be a great... basically premise for an Elseworld story where it's like Batman is just, he's in Arkham himself, and he made up all these other characters that he fights in order to basically, as a way of like coping with his parents' death. So I think it's anything like that deals with this psychological thing where it's like this twist, it's fascinating to me. So the thing that's so scary about Labyrinth to me is that even though it's not real, it's so easy to believe that it could be real. And so with Visitor, it's a similar thing, and that's why I think Visitor foreshadows Labyrinth, because it's like, this is like Labyrinth, but if it was real, and obviously it pertains to this kid Cyrus and not Clark in the episode Visitor, but it's not hard to believe that it could be Clark. Like it's so cool. It's fascinating, and it's tragic. It's fascinating. It's scary. I love it.
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Thank you.
but let's start keying in on the final three, because I know you wanted to touch on Witness.
Oh, well, I'm happy to talk about. Oh,
not Witness.
Accelerate first, and then
Exodus. That's it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Accelerate. I love Accelerate, and like I was saying, it's probably the darkest just in tone of season 2, and one of the darkest stories that really Smallville's ever done of basically that first scene. Okay, first of all, I gotta talk about the first scene of Clark and Lana in the Talon watching the movie and them holding hands. Basically, well, a lot of grabs Clark's hand when the scary parts of the movie happen. It's like, this is just building up to Clark and Lana finally getting together at the end of the season. I love it. Accelerate is like, it's an episode that's really Clark and Lana on an adventure together. And that's one of the things I love so much. I love any episodes that are Clark and Lana on an adventure together. One of my favorite episodes of season 3 is Slumber, which is very similar, and then it's them on an adventure together. That's why I love Accelerate so much. It's Clark and Lana on an adventure together, and it's, like I said, it's really dark. I mean, it's about Lana's childhood friend that drowned, which is like, I mean, it's a dark episode. And like, I mean, that scene in the Talon, I mean, it's legitimately shot like a horror movie. When she sees basically, she just sees this little girl in after she's just watched this scary movie. And I mean, it's just like
And that little girl was both cute and creepy all in one film.
Yes, yeah. I mean, really creepy. And I mean, yes, cute, but also just like creepy. And then once you find out that she's got basically once you find out what's going on and she's a clone and that she doesn't have morals basically because of that advanced aging process. So she doesn't have the sense of right and wrong that she should have at that age. And while she's got superpowers, I mean, it's scary. Like when she basically takes Clark back to where she died and she basically wants to get revenge on Lana and push her into the water. And oh man, yeah, Emily is just, she's, yeah, you put it perfect. But also that scene with Lana where she falls into the water at the end and then Clark saves her. And I love, like, I mean, again, it's not really a kind of kiss, but him giving her CPR and saving her and she just asks him to hold her. I love that scene.
And you know what was cool? The running in the rain effect.
Yes, in the graveyard with Clark and Pete, when he sees Emily. Yes, that scene is amazing. And talking about creepy stuff in this episode, one of the best Lionel scenes in the whole show is the scene at the end of this episode when he's talking to Pete Dinsmore, who I was just talking to Brent from the DCTV Squadcast about Pete Dinsmore, because he brought up on the most recent episode of DCTV Squadcast that Neil Flynn voiced Mario McCabe's dad in the Vixen animated series. And so I was telling him, yeah, Neil Flynn has previous DC cred. He was on Smallville in episodes Accelerate and Forsaken. And so anyway, in this episode, Accelerate, that ending scene, dude, of basically Lionel telling Pete that he can't see Pete Dinsmore, not Pete Ross. Kind of confusing because there are two Petes in this episode. But Pete Dinsmore, and he's like, yeah, you can't see your daughter anymore. And then Lionel walks into that room and gives her the bunny. And
he's being so nice. Yeah. And I'm like, you're an asshole on two fronts.
Yes, because he's so sinister, but he's being nice to his little girl, but he's so...
Yeah. I'm like, this poor bastard is watching you become the surrogate father for his own daughter, which is
weird. Yes.
But then also, you've never been this compassionate with your own son. And he's your flesh and blood, not a clone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And Emily tells him something like, I don't like you. And he goes, his reaction to that, oh. He just, like, Lionel's reactions, I don't even know how to describe it, but just something, there's some, like, sort of malice to it, but, like, even, like, yeah, there, nothing, basically, it's like Lionel, nothing phases him quite, but it's why and we'll talk about this, but I'll just touch on it here because there's a parallel, because we're about to touch on it. Later when Pete, I talked about the scene earlier when Pete basically distracts him so Clark can steal the key, and basically Pete tells him, everyone in this town hates you, and Lionel goes, yes, they do, but I value their hatred. And, like, it's this sense where, like, Lionel, nothing anybody can say to him bothers him until, well, then when Clark steals the key, then in that scene, Lionel gets really pissed, and he's about to hit Pete, and Pete is like, careful, Lionel, wouldn't want to look weak, because Lionel basically says that when you're angry, you're weak. He said something that, like, to that effect to Pete just before that. Anyway, I'm getting off on a tangent with that scene. But anyway, what I'm trying to get back to with this scene with Lionel and Emily, it's so creepy there at the end. And the fact that it's the way they filmed it and the way they played it, there's no music. Because, like, usually Smallville, you expect it, most episodes end with music. This episode doesn't end, not even like a score here. It's just completely silent as they pan out of that room. And you see Lionel talking to, I think the last line of the episode is, it's Lionel, it's after they start playing the credits. It's before the end credits theme kicks in. And it's just Lionel saying to Emily, he's like, I think he says, what are you going to name the bunny? And she tells him, and he's like, oh, that's a very nice name. And it's so sinister, it's so creepy, and it's so good. Yeah. It's amazing.
And also, with the whole cloning aspect, I always thought that that was going to be their way of eventually introducing, and it kind of sort of
Connell.
Connell, but also Bizarro.
Yeah. Well, both those characters did sort of coming to the show. I mean, Kal-El was, they still made him a clone
of Lex,
they pulled it off. I mean, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, they even reference Pete Dinsmore when they do in season 10. He gets referenced with the here, I'm on the Smallville wiki right now. Yes, Pete Dinsmore does get a name drop in season 10. Here's what the Smallville wiki says. Pete Dinsmore's research about cloning his daughter Emily was mentioned when Tess was trying to find a cure for Alexander because he was aging rapidly. Dr. Christina Lamel said that she was able to use his research to develop a cure, but in the end, Tess destroyed the serum because she knew Alexander was too dangerous to be allowed out in public. So yes, they did. That did play back into season 10.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was...
No, so... Yeah, but I mean, I remember when I saw this, in my head, I thought, oh, this could be a potential way to introduce Bizarro or
Superman. Yeah, yeah. No, you're right.
And it turns out that's exactly what it did.
Oh, it's such a dark, like, that whole episode, like, very shot.
Well, it could have easily been a Halloween
episode. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's shot so dark, like, the scenes in, like, it's shot, parts of it, like I said, are shot like a horror movie. It's so creepy. I love this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then we get into let's
calling picks up directly from Accelerate. Like I was saying, Clark and Lana got, I felt like they got a lot closer in Accelerate, and then calling starts. Okay, I gotta go off. I gotta go off here, Adam. I gotta go off. Calling starts my favorite scene in the whole series, and I brought that up when I think Joseph Golden wrote into us, and he asked what our favorite DC TV scenes ever were, and I brought up this scene from Calling because it's my favorite scene from Smallville, dude. Finally, dude, 43 episodes of waiting in agony for this to happen, and it paid off even more amazing than I could have ever imagined. The first real Klonna kiss in the show when Lana goes up to Clark's loft for his birthday, and she brings him the cake, and at first Clark is basically he's
and they did everything short of eating that cake.
They
did everything but eat the cake.
Okay, that's true. Maybe he probably ate it later. But so basically he starts out, he's sort of like, well, it's not really my birthday, it's just an arbitrary date that my parents picked out. But she's like, well, maybe some people want to celebrate the day that you came in our lives, which really just shows how much she loves him and how much he means to her that she wants to celebrate that. And basically, Clark basically tells her what he's wishing for, that he doesn't have anything to wish for because what he's always wished for since he was 5 years old is right in front of him, and it's Lana. And then we finally get that kiss, and it's freaking beautiful. I almost swore. I try not to drop the F-bomb on this show. But
well, I think we get one. We're okay. One, you know.
I get one. Okay, whatever. Well, I caught myself anyway, so it doesn't.
Hey, listen. It's a miracle it didn't come out during the Batman and Robin episode.
That's true. Well, it almost came out here for me, but God, it's freaking beautiful. That shot of them, you've got the birthday cake sort of illuminating the loft, and you've got them finally after 43 episodes, dude. I waited 43 episodes for this.
And then it's funny because, you know, she later on the next day, she starts pulling away.
Yes.
Partly based on Chloe's whining reaction and partly because she's nervous about damaging the friendship.
And I thought there was something so real to that. Like there's something like...
Oh, for sure, yeah. But definitely the cool thing is when Clark asks Lex about it, and despite all the sort of the occasional times where they've had issues this season with each other,
mm-hmm.
that they reverted back to their go-to where they get advice from each other and they counsel each other, I thought it was a nice, you know.
Oh, yeah. I said, in the early seasons, Lex was a Klonna shipper, and that's something that I love. And it's in such stark contrast to what happens in season 6 when he basically does everything in his effort to basically take everything Clark loves away from him, including Lana.
But then it was funny when he, you know, Clark is preparing the speech.
Yeah.
Because didn't we just see this like at the beginning of the season?
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, two like I said, two Lex weddings in one season. But that speech, dude, you brought me to another one of my favorite. There's three scenes in this episode that are some of my favorite scenes in the history of Smallville. I mentioned one. That was my number one ever, was that first scene from this episode. But then also up there, that speech that Clark makes at the wedding rehearsal dinner. And he's talking to, basically he's talking about Lex and Helen, but he's looking at Lana the whole time. And you can tell, like, he's obviously talking about Lana.
Oh, sure.
In the, yeah. Oh, my God, it's so sweet. It's a beautiful scene. I love it. And it's sort of what shows Lana that, you know, maybe she was thinking about things wrong and that maybe they should proceed with this relationship. And obviously, I'll let you talk for a little bit, because my final scene that I wanted to bring up, that's my third favorite, that's my other favorite scene, one of my three favorite scenes at the end of this episode that sort of relates to that. But this whole episode, it's like I said, it's my favorite episode of the whole show. And I love it.
And this is where the whole theft and all that is
brought. Yeah.
I mean, we touched on it earlier, but it's worth pointing out that I find it very, you know, it was an interesting new direction for the show that it was partly out of necessity, but that Jonathan was able to trust somebody else with at least a portion of Clark Seeker.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, unlike Pete, who is a friend of the family and whose family has connections with the Kents, Helen is a total outsider, right? And that Jonathan realizes that in some cases for the health and safety of his family, he had to open up, right?
There's that great conversation between Jonathan and Helen where Jonathan's like, basically Helen's like, Jonathan asked Helen if it could have been Lex, I think, that took the blood. And Helen basically is like, I can't believe you'd say that. I know what kind of man Lex is. And he's like, for the sake of my family, you better hope you do. Oh, yeah, so good.
Yeah. So there's, you know, so that's brought up for, you know, the whole confrontation between with Helen and Lex is brought up about the blood. But also, you know, the Clark starts hearing that piercing humming noise or the ringing.
Yes, and we hear Jor-El for the first time, played by Terrence Stamp on the show. Yeah. This is his first appearance.
It's the octagonal key in the ship calling.
Yeah.
And you hear, you know, like you said, Terrence Stamp's voice saying it's time or whatever.
Yeah, and then Clark goes down in the storm cellar, and then to be continued.
Oh, what a cliffhanger!
Oh yeah,
it was just, and this damn music director, the bastard that he is, starts, and I mean that in a kind way, starts, you know, keying in the Superman theme.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you pricks, why you gotta get me all excited and then what's so yeah, and then but just before that, I think is the moment that you.
Yes, yes. Well, I thought of another moment too that I want to mention before that even, which is a conversation Lana and Helen have, where basically, and I have the quote actually right here because Smallville Wiki fortunately has it. But basically, Lana says, if you knew that Lex was keeping secrets from you, but he was being truthful about the important things, like the way he feels about you, would that be enough? And Helen says, I guess you have to decide, is the part of themselves they're willing to share with you better than not having them in your life at all?
Yeah, that was some great dialogue by her, I will say.
Yeah, that. I love that. I love that. Hold on, I got to read, because they've got Clark's little speech from the wedding, too. It's really short, but I want to read that, too, because it's so beautiful. I've been looking through every book from Socrates to Shakespeare, trying to find someone who could put into words the way Lex and Helen feel about each other. But what I realized is there are no words for it. And you have it, you trust it, and you believe in it. Take a chance on it. And you're willing to sacrifice anything to keep it, no matter what the cost, to Helen and Lex. It's such a great speech. And the fact that he's talking about Lana the whole time is just amazing. Mm-hmm. But yes, the scene I'm talking about that I really wanted to get to is the second. I'm telling you, dude, 43 episodes, I waited for just one. And I say, I throw in the caveat real Clonic Kiss because I don't count the one from Nicodemus and I don't count the one from Red. But finally, and two in one episode after 43 episodes, and we get that scene. Oh my goodness, amazing, amazing scene at the end of Clark and Lana kissing.
Yeah, and then I mean, it was what for this episode. I think it was definitely well earned and well choreographed and well timed and all that.
Oh yeah.
So
finally we agree. We agree about this is one of.
Well, I didn't say I objected to their relationship. That was never my objection. At all.
Here's something I will say. I will say because I think it's necessary for me to say this. I don't know if necessary is the right word. I think I would like to explain something about why this relationship I think is so amazing. And it's something that I was thinking about recently, and I've struggled to put this into words sometimes, but I think I finally got a good grasp on a good explanation for why I think that Clark and Lana are meant to be together. I think that there's something so special about the idea that, you know, obviously Clark, he's essentially a god. He's this larger than life hero who people look up to, and he obviously goes to Metropolis and he's in the big city and everybody knows the name Superman. Everybody knows who he is. And I think there's something really special about his true love being not some girl from the city, not some glamorous I don't know, so, you know, Superman could have pretty much any. I mean, you know how many girls probably want to sleep with Superman once he goes to Metropolis, and it's like there's something to me that's really special about him only having eyes for this girl he grew up with in Smallville, this small town girl from his high school sweetheart from Smallville. And I think there's something that there's the line in Smallville, always hold on to Smallville. And it's this idea that Clark will always go back. What connects him most to humanity is Smallville, is what happened in Smallville, is the values that his parents instilled in him in Smallville, and is the girl he fell in love with in Smallville. And I think that there's something that really appeals to me about that idea, and of that no matter how great of a hero he becomes, no matter how famous he becomes, that he'll always go back to his high school sweetheart, this girl from that he grew up with.
I mean, that's a fair perspective, but it ultimately wasn't meant to be because they didn't end up together. In any continuity, they never ended
well,
up together.
Well, but I'm saying that's why in my eyes they should. That's what I'm saying is because I'm trying to give a justification for why I believe that. I mean, obviously I have a lot more to say. I could say a lot more about that just in the idea of all the reasons, all the examples, particularly on Smallville, why I feel that their love, I mean, is triumphs overall, and why I think that they are meant to be together. But essentially what it comes down to is I love that idea, the one that I just talked about.
What I will say is that Lana, in any continuity, being whether it's TV, comics, or movies, mm-hmm. or whatever, being his first love, definitely has a valued, you know, part of and place in the mythology, because that is she along with his parents mm-hmm. are the first initial tethers to humanity.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
But then, see, when he goes to Metropolis, he could very easily get lost in the, you know, once he makes his first rescue and whatnot, once notoriety starts to take hold, he could very well get lost in the hoopla at all. But then but then Lois is the other piece of the puzzle that then sort of keeps him grounded, where she is the next, you know, tether to humanity, because he could, by then he can get really lost in the powers and the adulation of it all, and it's her that then continues that
You see, to me though, it's even more powerful. It's even more. If it's
but here's the fault. Lana's at fault in any continuity because she doesn't want to. She doesn't want to leave home. She doesn't want to leave Smallville.
Well, that's exactly what she wants to do.
No, but for the longest time, she says she leaves partly out of necessity afterwards. But she even says it at the end of, she says it actually several times through season two, where she says, Smallville's my home. I don't want to leave Smallville.
Well, she wavers back and forth on it, but a lot of what she says on Smallville is that she does want to leave. I mean, there's the scene in Nicodemus where she like is enamored.
Right, but I'm talking larger in addition to Smallville. I'm talking larger.
She goes to in season three. It's a big deal of her wanting to leave Smallville. It comes up in Magnetic, I think. And then, of course, at the end of season three, she leaves for freaking Paris. And then later.
But ultimately, Smallville came up with their own reasoning for why she and Clark couldn't work out.
But she's not even in even in Superman for All Seasons. If you want to go back to the comics, she left Smallville.
Right.
She left Smallville too, and then again, I'll go back to Smallville, the season 11 comics. She's in freaking Africa. She's as far away from Smallville as you can get. But
8 times out of 10, the crux of the character is she doesn't want to leave Smallville.
What do you mean 8 times out of 10? I just gave you probably 8 times when she said.
I'm counting the two instances, Smallville and what was the other one you said, Superman for All Seasons? I'm counting those as two instances because Smallville is one continuity. So every time she says she wants to leave, it's part of.
So eight out of ten
times, her whole shtick is I'm not leaving Smallville, but.
Well, Smallville's the best interpretation of the Superman mythos, though. So it should be the definitive version.
And either way, he still would end up with Lana. So your dream relationship is out the window. Well, even if people take what you said at face value, if all of a sudden Smallville became the ultimate Superman canon, like acknowledged by DC and Warner Brothers, your ideal relationship would still not.
Can I tell you something really creepy, Adam?
No. Well, you can.
Right as we were having this conversation about Lana, just coincidentally, a notification just showed up on my phone that Jason Inman just dropped a new video for his geek history lesson, I think, about history of Lana Lang. Well, is that not a really creepy coincidence that happened right as we were talking about Lana?
That's kind of cool, yeah. but at the end of the day, what I'm saying is there are people that will outright dismiss her importance in terms of not only relegated to Smallville, but in the large country. I'm not doing that at all. I think she has a very important place in the country. I'm just saying that there have been a lot of chances where, and a lot of retcons in Smallville in the various iterations of the comics, where if they wanted Lana and Clark to be the go-to, they could have done it. Like when they did the New 52.
That's what they should have done instead of Clark and Diana. That's what they should have done.
No, but see, they're always going to revert, no matter what, they're always going to revert back to Clark and Lois. It's just that's.
Well, they should. At some point, I want somebody to try it.
Well, then your ideal hope was that Smallville ended at 5 seasons.
Well, there's more. They get back together. They're still together. I mean, the Clark and Lana relationship doesn't end for good until season 8.
Right, but put it this way. The minute the show brought in Lois, that was...
Well, they brought in Lois before season 5. They brought her in season 4.
But they stretched it out for as long as they could. But...
Listen,
You're never gonna get the full blown Lana Clark relationship unless unless there's either a massive retcon or somebody tells.
Well, I'm hoping somebody does at some point. I would love that. But in Smallville got really, I mean, Smallville pretty much gave me what I want. I mean, that's why season seven I love so much, because season seven, for most of season seven, Clark and Lana were living together in season seven.
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess we should get back on track to Exodus.
But let's talk about yes. the finale now, because the finale, it's funny because the calling leads right into Exodus and
Lana. More Klaana in Exodus. That I just more moments that I love. First of all, I got to talk about the scene in the field with "Take Me Away" by Lifehouse playing.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love that scene. Freaking beautiful. First of all, I love any scenes in Smallville that really you really get the feeling of like that they're in the small town. Like I talked about this in season one. Like I love the idea. Like they're in this beautiful pasture, basically sitting under this tree. And I mean, it's freaking beautiful. It's so romantic. I love that scene. It's just, I mean, the two of them. I freaking love it. We get another Klaana kiss in that scene. They're just talking there. Oh, I love it. It's beautiful. And "Take Me Away" by Lifehouse. I mean, Lifehouse is like Klaana's artist, basically, because obviously their song "Everything" is by Lifehouse, and we get this other song "Take Me Away" that's beautiful in the scene in Exodus. Amazing.
Oh yeah, I mean Lifehouse, I mean, they were a staple on. But
that's why they're my favorite band.
so you get the opening scene where he goes into the barn and he starts talking to, or he starts conversing with Jor-El, and Jor-El is adamant that your the next phase of your journey starts now. Mm-hmm. And he's like, everybody that you love or that you're tied to in Smallville has served their purpose.
Yeah. And there's that part where he shows the holograms of Lana's family. Yeah. And Lana's there. And this is a shot that's been used like so many Smallville or Klaana fan videos I've seen. That use that shot that's just really, it's really kind of sad, out of context, especially when they use it in the Smallville Klaana fan videos that I watch all the time, mm-hmm. which is Clark basically reaching out and touching the hologram of Lana and it basically fading away. Anyway, I love that.
Yeah, so then the episode becomes about, you know, there's the wedding in between, but the central focus, I think, is Clark trying to, because the way Jor-El is talking, it's very ambiguous in the sense that Clark could easily misconstrue the fact that what Jor-El is saying means that he is meant to conquer, because it's so ambiguous.
Yeah.
So Clark is left trying to come up with a way to not have to adhere to Jor-El's demand. So he comes up with the idea of he's gonna destroy the
ship. Oh, and just the scene where Clark gets the kryptonite, the House of El shield, basically burned into his chest. Is that not one of the most gruesome scenes?
That was cool because it was also a nod to like the shirt rip.
Well, yeah, but was it not nasty?
Well, yeah, it looked like it hurt, but it was cool in the sense that it was a nod to that as well.
Yeah, and it also, one thing that it reminds me of, obviously this came later, but in Young Justice, when Match basically uses the reflection and burns burns the Superman crest into his chest. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I don't know if
that
was supposed to be a nod to this, but that's the way I take it.
Well, you take everything.
Of course. Everything should be a nod to Smallville.
But But yeah, so I love that moment. That, you know, that moment was cool because, again, it was a cool nod to the shirt rip motif kind of thing. And so they come up with, apparently Lionel's been creating a replica of the key,
mm-hmm.
of the octagonal key that's made of kryptonite. So, excuse me. Clark comes up with the bright idea of, I'm going to use it to destroy the ship. And to great paint, and that's, and this goes back to the scene you mentioned. With
oh yeah.
In the cave where he.
Careful, Mr. Luther. Wouldn't want to look weak. That's probably Pete's best scene on the entire show. It's so good.
Where he distracts, right?
Because like Pete's had this whole rivalry with the Luthers the whole show. Not really a rivalry, but like he hates Luthers, and he finally gets
animosity because of what
animosity, happens, yeah. And he finally gets one over on the Luthers, and it's so good.
So he steals the kryptonite made version of mm-hmm. the key, and he puts it in the ship. Mm-hmm. And it actually does what Clark hopes it'll do.
Yeah, but he didn't read the side effects.
Yeah, and first of all, it's going to great pain to himself because he's in direct contact with kryptonite. Yeah. But also when he destroys the ship, it sends a reverberation beyond the storm cellar that ends up causing Jonathan and Martha, who are in the truck, to have an accident.
Yes. And there's a great parallel here, Adam. Basically.
To the pilot?
What's that?
To the pilot?
I wasn't. Well, yes, to the pilot, sure. I definitely there. But what I was thinking of was, well, maybe I should wait. Maybe, you know what? I'll wait because there's another scene I'm going to bring up that actually is better to bring up this parallel for. But I'll save it for a second. So.
Well, my parallel is because, you know, the ship essentially caused an accident
mm-hmm.
in the pilot, which brought them a child.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And here, the ship caused them to get into another accident, which now took away a child.
Yes, that you're right. Yes, that is great parallel. Should I say the parallel I'm thinking of, or should I wait a second? Did you have more to say
about
that?
Go ahead, say it. Well, I was just going to say that what's interesting is that when they came up with this whole Martha's pregnant thing, you knew instantly that that wasn't going to stick. At least I did, because there was no way they were going to add another child to the Kent dynamic. I mean, they could have, but even through all of its alternate takes on mythology, when it needed to, Smallville stayed close to the
story. I remember thinking it was unlikely, but I thought there was a possibility.
No, see, I knew they were never gonna let it stick. So, but the tragedy in it all is that. And it's a natural instance of Jonathan being upset and putting some of his anger and sadness onto Clark.
That John Schneider is so good in that scene at the hospital when he just looks at Clark right. And he's like, "What did you do, Clark?" And it's just like you see the pain in his face. It's like, I mean, John Schneider does not get enough credit for how freaking amazing he was on this show, and the emotion and the just he was so good.
and it really like it shows you the again it reinforces the struggle and the burden that Clark faces, because every decision that he makes regarding his powers and abilities, if he makes the wrong choice, could have dire consequences.
Yeah.
Not necessarily to himself, but to other people.
Yeah.
And this echoes that. So he decides that, well, he puts the blame on himself, and he decides that to get away from that and to sort of forget about that, he's going to take off, and he finds a red kryptonite
costume, yeah,
and puts it on and decides to leave Smallville.
It's heartbreaking, dude. It's heartbreaking because you see how much pain Clark is in that he would resort to that, but it's like,
yeah,
oh man, it's heartbreaking.
And you know, so he sort of, when he puts as he's getting ready to leave, Lana
trying. Okay, this is where I'm, because now that we're getting to this final scene with Clark and Lana, I do feel like now I have to back up and I have to talk about something before this. So now I feel like I have to.
Okay, yeah. Okay, tell you.
We're getting past that directly now. So, basically, the there's a scene before that, before Clark does the whole thing with the kryptonite key, where he and Lana are going to go to the wedding, but he tells her that there's something that he has to do first. And the first thing I'll say about this scene is I love it. It's beautiful. Basically, Clark tells Lana, he's like, I can't tell you what it is, but I just want you to know that it's for us. It's for our future. And a kiss, and it's freaking beautiful. Another, again, like in two episodes, we got, like, I'm trying to think, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, we got 4 Clonic kisses in 2 episodes. After I had to wait 43 episodes for it, so.
Well, so you see, you're getting.
Yes, I was in. I can't even. I was on cloud 9. Watching the when I watched Smallville for the first time, I was on cloud 9 at the end of season 2. That's why I love it so much, and why. Last 3 episodes of season 2 are all in my top 20 episodes ever of Smallville. But this scene, Clark, the reason Clark, one of the reasons Clark is doing the kryptonite key and trying to destroy the ship is because he thinks that the ship and Jor-El is jeopardizing his future with Lana. Okay? So then the scene you were talking about earlier where Clark is putting the kryptonite key in the ship and he's like struggling and it's like causing him pain and he struggles through that pain with the kryptonite, put the key in the ship. Here's the parallel I was going to bring up. I was going to bring up the parallel to Requiem, where there's 2 times really on the show where Clark just fights through the what must be excruciating pain. And the 2 reasons he fights through that pain with the kryptonite, both of them are to be with Lana. It's in this scene with the ship where he fights through that pain so that he doesn't have to go away and follow his destiny or whatever he thinks that Jor-El is going to do to him, and so that he could stay with Lana. And then later he fights through kryptonite in Requiem so that he can kiss Lana one last time. And so I think it's just this beautiful parallel that, and again, it goes back to just how strong Clark's love is for Lana, that the 2 times he's able to fight through this kryptonite and that he just fights through all this pain to be able to do it is both of them or because he wants to be with Lana. And I think that's so beautiful and such a powerful, powerful parallel there.
Mm. Yeah. Well, yeah, that parallel, I once you started on that path, I knew where you were going. and it's a definite obvious one as well. But it's a good parallel to make. You know, so at the end, he's before he puts on the red kryptonite ring, you know, he's telling Lana that, you know, without telling her that everything's his fault, and that, you know, he something along the lines of he brings more pain. He brings pain and heartbreak to the people he loves, and he can't do that anymore. But then he puts on the ring, and he's asking her to go with him. And she's like, you know, she does the whole spiel about everything I love is here in Smallville. So then he leaves. But the cool thing about the ending was the fact that as he's riding away, through all the noise of the motorcycle and everything, you can hear the faint voice of Jor-El, basically, calling to Clark. So that, and that even though everything he tried, Clark can't escape.
And you hear some Superman music there too.
Yeah. And it's even more a little bit distorted. Like it's slowed down, but it's a little bit distorted.
Yeah.
So that you're not sure you know, it's distorted to reflect Clark's change in attitude.
And
in light of the red.
Yeah. One thing I was going to say about the scene earlier, when Clark and Lana, when basically the final scene between Clark and Lana before he goes to do the Kryptonite Key thing, is I love the song. Again, Smallville, the music on Smallville, I've talked about it before, it's always just on point. But the song Weapon by the Matthew Good Band plays in that scene. It's so good. I love it. It, along with Take Me Away, they're both on my Smallville playlist. But that scene, the scene at the end that you were talking about between Clark and Lana, that's the first time they say I love you to one another. Yeah. Where Lana says, I love you, Clark, and he says, I love you too, more than you'll ever know, and that's why I have to leave. Oh, it's heartbreaking, dude.
And the cool thing about that ending is that as he's riding away on the bike, you really don't know where they're going to go with it.
No, you're right.
Like, there really is a mystery of what's going to happen
and
next.
Smallville was another thing Smallville was always on point with, was cliffhangers, dude. Always on their
TV. I've always said their premieres and their finales were all
fun. Yeah, they always ended with these amazing cliffhangers. And yeah, this is no exception.
So, yeah, I mean, what a fantastic season.
Oh, yeah. Best, in my opinion, like I said at the top of the show, this is the best season of TV I've ever watched.
So yeah, I mean, I guess we can rate this.
Oh yeah, well, I don't. After I just said that, I don't think it's any surprise what my rating's gonna be.
Well, I mean, let's do it for posterity, just for the sake of, you know, continuity.
Sure. Yeah. Of course. Of course.
But so, what's your grade for season two?
A plus 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 plus. Is that allowed?
All right. So in reality, yes, it's an A plus. Yeah.
If that's as high as I can go, then I guess it's an A plus.
Yeah. All right. And you know what? Here it is. You said I gave season one an A minus.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna go ahead and give season two an A plus.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about, Adam. Yes.
Yeah. So I like I said, a fantastic season and it's really an example of when Smallville is clicking, it's firing on all cylinders. Sure, that ties in with the motorcycle, which we saw a couple times in the season. So,
and I'll say the thing that I think really gives, I mean, besides what we just said, just in general, what gives season two, what puts it at the top of the pile for me, is that it's still in, I mean, it, like I said, those early seasons in general, I prefer to the later seasons, although I love every season, but I tend to just slightly prefer the earlier seasons. I love that it's still, again, because it's one of the early seasons, it's the second season, it's still focused on, you know, the teen romantic drama, high school aspect of the show. It's set primarily in Smallville still. There's still a lot of, I mean, not as much Meteor Freaks as in season one, but there's still a lot. I mean, there's still a fair amount in season two, I would say. And again, what the main thing that gives it the edge is the way it ends, like with my Smallville OTP finally getting together after 42, 43 episodes. Just, season two is just, it's just amazing. It's just,
And where the cool thing for me is that it's still, you know, very localized to Smallville and all that stuff, but it found a way to really hone in and explore Superman mythology in terms of powers, Red Kryptonite, and the whole discovering that he was from Krypton. Sure. It was a good balance all around.
Yeah. Speaking of Meteor Freaks, so, like we did with season one, did you want to point out some of your favorites?
Let me see which one. What's her name? The teacher.
Oh, Desiree. Yep. I was going to say her too. Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
Desiree. I'll go back to Ryan again because he's in the season again. And I really liked Visitor, the one from
Yep,
Visitor.
yep. Okay.
Those are my top
Okay.
three.
I can get on board with all three of those. I love those. I would say Desiree from this season, my number one. I would say she just, I mean, just so much fun. Her whole thing. I mean, it's hilarious, but it's really just so much fun. I love Desiree. So
Yeah.
Desiree would be number one for me. Let me think. I'll be honest. I really like Chrissy. I thought her power was cool. The way she sucks the life out of people. I really like her. I'll say Ryan, of course, too. Although he's not really a traditional meteor freak and that he's not a villain, but I think he still counts. I would say Tina Greer coming back. We didn't talk about Visage at all, but I'd say.
Well, again, it was one of those episodes that was sort of, for me, neither here nor there. But what I did like about it was that it put a close to the whole Wendy saga.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I don't know. I really like Visage, so I'll mention Tina Greer. And then also I'll say Cyrus in Visitor, just because I thought it was so fascinating and just so just made you just, I mean, it was like I was saying before, you're trying to figure out, you know, what's true and what's not, whether he is Kryptonian. I was just, it's really a fascinating mystery in that episode. One character, not a meteor freak, but we forgot to mention, really, I talked about him very briefly, but then I mentioned, bring him up later, Henry Small. I love Lana's storyline with him and you know, trying to reconnect
yeah.
with her father and basically the whole thing with him. And I thought it was really an interesting dynamic with the two of them. And obviously he plays into Suspect when he defends
yes, yeah,
Jonathan.
He's,
so,
yeah.
And of course the way things end with them, it's, I mean, it's sad, but you know, Lana trying to, you know, I mean, I think she does what's right in that, convincing him to try and fix his marriage, you know. And so,
yeah.
I don't know, I really love that Lana got a sort of a solo, a real, a long-form solo storyline this season.
Well, it's cool to have something that was independent of her relationship with Clark, which is...
Yeah, I mean, you know how much I love that, but...
Well, no, but the thing is, you know, real people have lives and issues outside of whoever their significant
right, right.
Is.
No. I'm not arguing with you there. I'm saying yes. I totally
yeah.
agree with you there. I mean, I'm saying
it's cool. It's,
as much
yeah.
as I love so the Clown relationship, but it is cool to see her, you know, getting her own solo story.
Yeah, it's a good thing that Smallville was able to, you know, tap into that.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall a fantastic season, and we've now done. Two seasons in our 10-season Smallville retrospective,
yeah.
So we got plenty more to
well,
go.
Season 3's up next, of course.
Season 3's up next, if you want to follow
along. That'll be our review of that will be coming up in May, so.
Yes, and I believe we have a guest planned for that
yes.
one.
Yes, I believe Ricky Church is coming on with
oh,
us.
Oh, good. Be nice to talk to
you. I hope I'm right about that.
It'd be nice to talk to Ricky, and... look forward to get his thoughts
absolutely.
On that. But until then, start your rewatch of season 3. Because we haven't talked about Batman this episode, we'll mention that we are part of the Batman podcast.
I did talk about the Batcat wedding at the top, as usual.
Well, okay, it's technically it counts, but we are part of the Batman podcast network. So go there for all your. All your Batman podcast needs went on episode where we're not really talking about Batman. There's probably much there that will to hold you over. And if you want to talk to Jordan on social media about season 2 of Smallville, where can
yeah,
you do that?
You can talk to me, sure, about season 2 of Smallville, about any Smallville. anytime, I'm always happy to talk Smallville, of course, at BatFanJordanV on Twitter and on Instagram.
And you can find me, hopefully not in real life, unless you're Desiree Atkins, because that would be crazy. but you can find me online, or definitely not if you're one of those stalker kind of people, like the guy with the scary big dog. What was it? What was his name? Don't come at me with some scary big dogs. But if you want to talk on social media, again, you can track me down if you look like Desiree Atkins, by all means. But otherwise, feel free to hit me up at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter, and I'll talk to you about season 2 of Smallville. I'll talk to you about any season of Smallville. And I'll talk to you about other non-Smallville superhero things. So I welcome that discussion.
Oh, and I also want to say, solicit some iTunes reviews. So if you're liking what we're doing, we'd love to hear it. We'd love for you to write some iTunes review, and we really appreciate it.
And until the next episode, we hope you have a wonderful week and a wonderful weekend.
So long. Klaana forever. Bye-bye.